It's all right. We're recording now.
Hello,
Because you're here.
everybody.
Hello, everybody. Well,
So how
nothing
was
much
church?
happened in this episode, so we might as well just say that's the end of this segment.
No big
It's
deal.
the end of the book.
Yeah. We could
That'll
talk
do
about
it.
the lettuce.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you what, right, so before we was going live, you were talking about the Amdram version of
Alien.
Aliens.
Alien.
There's like a community center in the next town over, and once a year they do WWE style wrestling, but it's
Oh,
like,
that's cool.
But like the Amdram version of that.
Okay.
I love that.
I've always wanted to go.
Aaron, the brother Voodoo, he loves all that wrestling stuff, you know. He's
I've
even
never,
done
I've never,
like
I've never been able to watch it. I've never been able to watch it myself, but like I admire it as a cultural form.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a form of theatre that I'm not really that into.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can...
I'm not into it, but I love that it exists, and I love that it.
To me, I think of it as like the American version of pantomime.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
The problem is a couple of the people from it get taken seriously because there's money involved.
Yeah.
I would recommend there's a, you know how during like WWE, if there's a celebrity in the audience, sometimes they'll interview them after the thingy. There's one where Andy Warhol was in the audience.
Oh wow.
And they interview him, and recommend look that up and watch it. It's a thing to behold.
But you don't rate Andy Warhol at all, do you?
I do not rate Andy Warhol, no.
How do you
funny, he speaks very highly of you, you know.
so he should.
Yeah. How do you rate Soup?
Love Soup. Absolutely
love
adore
soup.
Yeah.
Okay. But you don't like Andy Warhol's take on Soup?
Not he ruined Soup for me.
What was the brand of soup that he did?
Campbell's.
Campbell's, that's it. Have you ever had Campbell's soup? I don't think I've ever had Campbell's soup.
I think I've like once. It's an American soup, and I believe they're based in Paris, Texas.
That's interesting.
We could do a Campbell's soup review. Is it better than the painting?
No, let's see now.
Yes.
Oh, he's got his wank shirt on again.
Wank.
Yeah.
Wank.
I'm trying to think what there's a British Campbell's, there's a Scottish Campbell's as well.
What is a different, a separate soup company?
I'm not sure, or if it's just an advertising thing, but.
Campbell's, is it
Campbell's?
Scottish
name? Am I getting Campbell is, yeah.
It's a Scottish name.
Definitely. Yeah, they're one of the biggest factions.
Name.
If you go back in history, there's the Campbell's and the McDonald's. And.
Oh, yeah. With the
one of them started a soup company and the other one started a hamburger restaurant.
Mm.
And then they competed. And the hamburgers won.
Are the McDonald's the one that did the real life version of the Red Wedding?
No, they were the ones that had it done to them.
Ah, they were the ones that had it done to them, right. Ah, okay. Yeah.
Speaking of Clan MacDonald.
It's not Campbell. What am I thinking of? It's a Scottish soup company. I'm sure it begins with C, but it doesn't. Baxter's, that's what I'm thinking of.
Oh, Baxter's. Similar kind of branding. I can see why you mixed them up.
Yeah, I got mixed up there, yeah. But I knew they were Scottish, so, yeah, they're from Speyside. So.
But speaking of Clan MacDonald, a hard film recommendation, The Founder, which is about the founding of McDonald's. It's a very, very good film. The dude who founded it, like, he had a good idea and he founded like a cool thing, but then it immediately got bought up by capital and he got screwed over. And it's a very good watch.
Oh, okay. One thing I will say about McDonald's, I love the McPlant.
Yeah, never had that, but I know it's not good food, but I love it.
But you don't go there thinking it's good food.
It's fucking tasty.
It's tasty, yeah. It's like, and it's cheap.
Yeah.
It's cheap and tasty. Like, you know, if you want to give your kids a treat for getting a good grade or something,
fudge is just enough.
We're not allowed to do that anymore. Because of woke.
What the hell are you thinking about? I was talking about an advert, an old advert. A finger of fudge is just enough to give you a good treat.
Where'd you put it? Which end?
It's full of Cadbury goodness.
I bet it is.
And very small and neat.
Well, but one time when I was at a conference in Manchester, I wanted to grab something to eat because I basically hadn't eaten for most of the day. It was like 1 in the morning. I was like, look, I better eat something for just like, you know, sustenance reasons. So there was a 24-hour McDonald's, and me and a guy called Dan I was with went in there. He got the standard Big Mac and whatever. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to like a full McDonald's right before I'm going to go to bed. So I went in there and asked for a salad.
There's hardly any food.
Why go to McDonald's and get a salad?
A Big Mac is nowhere like, else. A Big Mac's like that size as well. What the fuck?
Okay, so you had the McDonald's salad.
Sorry, carry on.
And the look that the woman behind the till gave me, like, was rightly like,
so.
No one ordered a salad in the Manchester. No. Like, no one's coming in.
Why would anybody realistically go into a fucking McDonald's and want a salad?
I mean, first off, why would anybody order a salad anyway?
Anyway, but yeah, exactly.
Particularly like McDonald's.
Salads.
No,
or something.
You don't. No, you don't.
And I'll tell you what. It was mediocre, which is better.
Better than,
you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was.
See,
it was
I wasn't
going to
get involved
salad.
In this discussion, but I'm trying to bite my tongue.
I believe when people claim to enjoy salads, I feel the same way as when people claim to enjoy Final Fantasy games. I flat out don't believe them.
I like a salad. I don't like Final Fantasy games, but I do like a salad.
I can believe the Final Fantasy more than the salad.
Because is this the sushi thing again? Because sushi feels a lot like a salad.
No, sushi's decent food. It's just that it's one of those foods that it's fine. It's as good as like a kebab, or not as good as a hamburger, but it's as good as a kebab or a hot dog, or it's perfectly good food. But people go nuts about it. Have you tried this? You really need to go to this place. Have you had the sushi here? Yeah, good sushi. I'm looking forward to it. So, like, shut the fuck up. Just eat it and shut the fuck up.
Today we are sponsored by your sushi.
I feel called out. I had sushi again the other
day. No, you're not like that. You just eat it and it, like, you don't bang on about it.
But also,
there's certain foods, sushi, guacamole. People won't shut the fuck up about guacamole.
It
used to be the case for hummus. Like, people would just go fucking. It's just a fuck. It's a dip. It's fine. It's just fine.
Are we all in agreement that the hamburger is the best food? Is the best meal?
Pizza close second, but
pizza.
But
but it has to be. But the thing is, for pizza, is that like a good pizza is divine, but a shit pizza is a bit miserable, right? Whereas if you just got some hamburger and like the vegetarian burgers are great now.
No, I'd rather have a bad pizza than a bad burger.
I think bad pizza is always fine, whereas a bad burger, you know, like a school burger that doesn't have the texture.
Or one
meat,
with all the gristliness, the cheapest.
And it doesn't taste, it just tastes of onion flavouring. Like, there's no discernible onion in it.
It's like
onion,
those tinned
and then
ones. It's like those tinned ones.
Yeah,
onion filled. It's like 2% meat.
I think in both cases. Like, there are things that are more delicious than a cheeseburger. But if you just want to, you know, just something.
What's more delicious than a cheeseburger?
I mean, I can't think of anything, but like
a bacon burger, bacon and cheeseburger.
I don't like bacon on burgers, actually.
Do you know? Oh yeah,
I know a couple of people like that. I find it quite interesting.
I'd eat it. Like, I'm not, but I think that to me that's two separate things, and mixing them diminishes both.
I've got a
bacon sandwich and a burger. I had bacon sandwiches this morning.
I almost had bacon rolls last night, but I had two egg rolls instead. Rolls on egg, egg rolls like the Chinese thing.
These were bacon and egg sandwiches. So.
You mean rolls on eggs? You mean egg on rolls?
Yeah. Fried egg on rolls, yeah.
Yeah, classic.
And can I just say, before we move on too far, speaking as a former child, a finger of fudge was never enough to be a treat.
No, they were always too small.
They
were always too small. Yeah.
They're not particularly good either. Fudge with the thinnest bit of chocolate. Yeah,
such a thin bit of chocolate. Even back in the '70s, before that was a thing.
Rather have like a curly whirly. Oh. That was better than a fudge.
Curly whirly was great. Yeah.
Curly whirly.
Sorry, I'm.
What is he doing?
Messing with the sun. I feel very white and pale.
You are white and pale. I mean, despite the fact that the two of us are very indoors people, you're probably the palest of the three of us. You know?
Drew's got that sort of
slightly yellow, sallow thing going on, and I've got
nicotine stains.
and I've got that sort of Mediterranean.
Yeah, and I look like a ghost. What's like? I've never worked out lighting. Like, I could do that. That doesn't seem too
I like
bad,
that one. I like the pink tones.
Okay, yeah. That feels Is it me, or is there some green coming through in all of that?
There is, but it might be to do with the background thing as well.
I think the shadows are going to look green when the lighting is pink, I think.
So, okay, all right. I'm going to turn the lettuce off.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea.
It's the joke has been made.
The other thing you could do is have a proper backdrop. I mean, I've got a proper backdrop, and I should probably put that up sometime. But the problem is, it'll just get covered in dog hair immediately.
Well, the trouble is, I feel it goes against
coloured ones. Actually,
I feel like it goes against our creative philosophy to actually
make an effort.
God, yeah. No, yeah.
You're making an effort though with the lighting, you know.
Well, these are just cheap like lights.
It's extra effort.
I forgot to make pre-show tea, so I'm going to make tea.
Okay, you make your
tea, and I'll Monte Cristo for something.
Okay, so we've got the lighting set up. What's your favourite chocolate bar?
That's a good one. It changes from time to time, but probably, I mean, sometimes I'd be honest, like just like milk chocolate. Well, Galaxy I can prefer, but it's more expensive. Yeah. So, but I am at the moment enjoying the chunky Kit Kat with the triple chocolate.
Oh, you can't beat a good Kit Kat or wafer based bar.
Yeah, wafer based. But if I buy a chocolate bar, it tends to be just like something simple, like a Galaxy.
This is subjective, but for me, the chunky Kit Kat throws the ratio off. The normal Kit Kat has the right ratio.
I know what you're saying, but also, as I say, at the moment they've got this chunky Kit Kat with triple chocolate. I was just saying actually quite nice. It's kind of like a chocolatey. Yeah.
It needs more chocolate. That's the problem with the chunky one. It needs more chocolate.
Well, it's got like a chocolate. It's got a wafer that's a sort of chocolated wafer, you know, so it's brown wafer instead of sort of beige. And it's also got like a sort of slightly, you know, not cream as in soft cream, hardened, like set cream, chocolate cream stuff.
Yeah. It's been too long since I had a chunky Kit Kat, but they're more wafer to chocolate ratio because I like the wafer and the chocolate to me is like a nice little accent for it. And I've always felt like with Kit Kat normals, they do a vegan version which are quite similar to Kit Kats.
You've got a video about that.
I got a video about them, yeah.
And check this chart, check it out on this very server.
Yeah, on this very server. Not available on YouTube.
Is it not anymore? No.
In fact, actually, exclusive. I'm going to be doing a lot more PeerTube exclusives, I think, in the year to come. Because I think, you know, the more that YouTube sort of finds its identity as TV version 2, I think that, like, what we do and the stuff that we do here is definitely, like, it's like defining the culture of PeerTube. PeerTube is in that moment.
YouTube is becoming Channel 5 and PeerTube is Radio 4. I think Hamish...
Radio 4.
Radio 4. We're really that mid-brow?
I don't know if we're that good, yeah. No, I think we're lower than that, I have to say.
No, I think we are. I think we're very Radio 4. Because Radio 4 does the like slumming it thing where they'll have Northerners on and stuff. You know what I mean?
That's what we're about, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Are we mid-brow or low-brow?
I don't think we fit categorization.
Somebody will be happy to tell us what we are.
We mix it up.
I'm sure.
But the thing is, like, lowbrow doesn't mean stupid. It just means a bit...
Popular, common, yeah.
Common or...
No, for me, the defining characteristic of midbrow is it's pretending to be cleverer than it is. And I don't think we fit that.
No, whereas we're pretending to be...
And highbrow is... actually sophisticated or clever stuff from a bourgeois point of view. That has to be remembered. These are all bourgeois expectations.
Do you want to see my little organ?
I'd rather see your cock.
Oh, that's cute.
Oh, that is very cute.
I've got a bigger one over there, but this is the little one. This is quite handy for just... Like, if I wanted to, like, play... Like, I'm not a great player, keyboard player, but if I wanted to play, like, something that sounds like a proper piano playing, then I'd do that. But for, like, just putting in notes to, like, make a bass line or anything like that, I use this. That's nice.
And does it... So it works pretty well on Linux?
It's all MIDI stuff. Everything works... MIDI works perfectly on Linux. There's nothing wrong. Although, one of the reasons I like this one is it's got a few internal things, like an arpeggiator and note holding and stuff like that. So you can set up an arpeggio. So even if your software doesn't support like making arpeggios, you can tell it this to do it, and it'll play an arpeggio into. So any any instrument or software. Yeah.
Oh, are you going to be competing in the Fedavision?
I don't know about that. I've not done it for the last few years. So I'm, the last two years it's been going on.
I totally think you should. Me and Drew could do backing vocals.
Yeah. Mr. Sandman. No, is that what was that? What, is that what you said was the only barbershop you knew or something? Yeah. And then I countered with "Baby on Board," although with a different tune. But never mind, "Baby on Board."
Baby on board.
Yeah. What am I talking about? The Expanse. Yeah, that was it.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. So
I cannot wait. I don't know if you're going to start with this or whether you're going to end with it. Because Chris sometimes does. But I am dying to hear the Chris theory on this because we don't get any more information than this last little bit. Also, worth pointing out that Amos says, "What the fuck is that?" in front of a big group of children.
That moment is quite Spielbergian. I think, like the framing of it and the way he's like holding the milk, and it's just continue. You know, it's like Spielberg's a twat, but he knew how to direct a little moment like that. Yeah. And he's just looking at the screen.
Also, in a good way, he's actually pouring it carefully. He's not just going, "Oh, this is a piece. So I'm going to pour it and it's going to go everywhere." Pouring it normally and then sort of loses focus.
And that kid's going to end up with very milky cereal.
Yeah, lots of milk in their cereal. Yeah. So, Chris, what are we talking about? Tell the viewer what we're talking about.
So I can show using the power of imagery.
Okay, I better zoom in to Chris then.
Zoom and enhance. Okay, here we go. We get given a very little there we go. It's a thing
coming out of Venus.
It's a jellyfish.
It's the belly button fluff coming out of the belly button of Venus.
Right, okay. I've shown it.
That metaphor makes me feel queasy.
It's a bit they've made their own ship.
Is that what you think? Because if I may, previously, you thought they were terraforming Venus.
I was a bit curious.
That was your previous theory. Yes.
Well, I mean, is there anything back still on Venus? Because you see, you see where it came from.
When it leaves, there's still some blue there. I noticed that, but I don't know if that was like the power of it taken off or what. You know,
or even the construction site.
Or they've terraformed Venus, and this is their ship.
I mean, it could be that they've terraformed like a small segment of it, and that's their ship. And they've already reached space travel, partly because of cannibalizing all our stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like it takes the work. What do you think the work is?
I think at the moment,
I meant to ask you that last time actually, because he was the work. Banging on about the work and you can't stop the work and all that. So
I would have said last episode that the work is terraforming Venus. At the moment now, I think the work is establishing the protomolecule as a faction or state in the solar system.
Let's see.
Also worth bearing in mind, that spaceship or jellyfish or whatever that has come out of Venus, that's fucking massive.
Yes, it's very, very big.
Look how big it is when it is that. Like Venus is a big fucking planet.
Yep.
That is very big.
Yeah, not like a big planet. I mean, it's the size, roughly the size of Earth.
A little bit smaller than Earth. I mean, Earth is pretty big. I mean, there are bigger planets, but you know.
Yeah, Earth's quite. I wouldn't want to walk from one side to the other. It's a big thing. You know,
So you might not be able to see the terraforming or whatever's happening below it anyway. I mean, that looks like it could be the size of a city, if not bigger.
I think bigger than that, yeah.
Wales.
No. So everything's the size of Wales, isn't it?
Yeah, size of Wales.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have a look at the episode details and see, or the wiki and see what it says.
I'm going to show the
obviously we have future. Yeah. Information and stuff.
I'll show like the initial erection and we'll see.
I think it's there. An ejaculation rather than an erection.
Oh, an ejaculation. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's big in it.
Yeah. You can't, there's nothing on Earth that
actually, that might be the size of like Great Britain, Germany, France, kind of like looking at the curve. It's hard. Maybe it's not quite that big, but it's, you know, it's as big as a country. It's something like that, right?
Yeah, it's big, and that's a lot of blue stuff in it as well. So a lot of proto molecule there. But also we saw in the eye of
Katoa. There was a little RT shot in his eye, sort of like what he's thinking about or something, I guess.
I thought in his eye, I thought he was like analyzing, like maybe like there were more spaceships and stuff coming down to Venus to have a look, and it was dissembling those as well. But we'd have heard about that, wouldn't we?
Yeah,
but there was something in his eye that looked like the disassembled ship, maybe from the last. From the episode a few episodes ago, where the space guy and the military space guy, sorry, the science guy and military science guy were all disassembled, and they fell in love, but like a special kind of space love, that you know,
space love,
yeah, like you know, it's a cosmic kind of divine. Love, I need to do my lights again. This is, but I can do. What about if I did this? I'll live with it.
According to the wiki, the proton molecule spread over the entire surface of Venus.
Okay.
I mean, no reason for it to not to, really, I guess.
I mean, I can't find the exact size of the thing, unfortunately.
What would be on Venus before the protomolecule hit it? Would there be not research stations? Or
I wouldn't have thought it just... so. It's horrendously corrosive. I read
or watched something about somebody saying that it would actually be easier to colonize Venus than colonize Mars. In that you wouldn't go onto the surface, you would have like floating cities in the atmosphere because it's very
that's been suggested.
Yeah, you just have blue, and I think either the atmosphere is or could be turned into like hydrocarbons, so you'd have all the fuel you need and stuff like that. So yeah. I imagine if they were to semi-colonize
Venus, the temperature in the atmosphere are, you know, not good.
Weather's not nice.
Mostly carbon dioxide.
Oh, right. Well, you can work with that.
Isn't it generally thought that Venus was an Earth-like planet that had a runaway greenhouse effect? And like,
yeah, that's kind of one of the things. Yeah, they reckon that the planetary things, because of the temperature changes as the solar system cooled down and stuff.
Mm. Ooh. I just saw something kind of neat. It's a little bit of a side note, but I just spotted this right now. I'll put the background up.
Drew, you're kind of like right off in the corner again, buddy.
You didn't notice last episode.
Last episode you were a wee bit further up. This time, like you've gone right. You know, you were right down.
So this is the Razorback, and you've got like the old like Wright brothers era planes,
yeah.
And then you've got them, and you've got like is that like some of like the Red Baron type plane, and then you've got like that's like an airline, like a you know like a jet that you go on holiday on, and then this looks like either a fighter jet or some sort of sex toy.
Space shuttle, I think. That one.
Space
that's
shuttle.
That's what that was for real as well. Yeah,
and something there, and then Razorback.
Yeah,
you know, it's the I don't know, just a cool, ominous a cool design. But the yes, it was, oh yeah, yeah. It tells sometimes the subtitle for the ominous music will come up before I've realised that there's ominousness.
telegraphing the ominousity.
Also, one thing I do like, and I wonder how this ever would like function in real life, is background, select background, where it just brings up all this jellyfish dust, like the amount of dust that it's like that's falling away from it.
Yep.
Well, it's the atmosphere of Venus, which is pretty grotty.
It's just like
dust and gas and stuff.
This looks like a Reaper from Reaper. Mass Effect.
I can't remember what they looked like.
They were like the biggest of they were the top bosses. They looked like the crustaceans that were just like, you know.
I might not have met the Reaper. I only played the first one, really.
There was one Reaper in the first one. It's the thing that it came down and it invaded the Citadel. Anyway, this looks like that. Like it looks kind of similar. Like it's like sort of like it's synthetic, but also like it looks organic.
Yeah, yeah, it's got
biomechanical.
Look to it, yeah,
And that is yeah. So and it looks a bit like a brain or a jellyfish or something. But a jellyfish is like it's a very well evolved organism. There are jellyfish that I believe that we can't even date. You know, that we don't even know how old they are.
Stop trying to date sea animals. Just stick with humans. Stick with humans. Oh, no, you're
Welsh sheep. It's going to sting.
You never expected that, did you?
No.
I'm annoyed with myself for that.
It's not like the sheep was underage.
Fair enough.
So this is like...
Four. Love to
share
that.
I don't know. Like, I mean, so one of the things about this that made me think a bit was the Katoa that Bobby was fighting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she was like she lured it away from where it was, you know, sort of
to save the others, down. Basically, yeah.
Yeah, and it usually, like the last time we saw a hybrid, it wasn't really interested in pursuing people. It was more interested
I have a small theory about that. I suspect her suit was one of the most energy-rich things in the area.
Even more
so than a person. Well, they do pursue people a bit. Not the hybrids as much as just the protomolecule itself.
Hmm.
But also, the hybrids are programmed a bit as well, I think. So I think it was programmed to kill people.
It doesn't really seem interested in her until she shoots at it. And the one that got on the ship, it did, when they were shooting at it, it would basically, like self-defense, it would go after them until they stopped. And she does shoot at it a lot. I think she just pisses it off.
Probably. Well, until she blows half its head off, you know.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
I don't want to forget things. That's, you know what I'm like.
I was just wondering, like, she shot his head off, but is that because it's, like, more like a human than the other hybrids or less evolved?
No, I think if you had the right ammunition, they could have killed the other hybrid with ammunition.
Yeah.
Whatever
its brain analog is, I think is still in here.
Still in the same place, yeah. It takes that. Yeah. But I like the little callback to when Bobby was wrestling with the suit. Remember in start of series 2?
Bobby was
wrestling with her own suit. Arm wrestling with her own suit. And she was like trying to. The suit had lost power and she was like, she can't move because obviously she can't carry that normally. It's a power armor and it's in the name. And then she eventually sort of overrules it and gets it up to fire.
I like that. That was
a definite
set up
callback,
so long ago.
It's 15 episodes or whatever back. You know, 16 episodes back. Yeah. It's quite good.
On that fight, I'm a bit curious about the gravity situation on Io, right? Because
it's pretty low.
It's pretty low, but they move when they're fighting outside. They move quite fast and they fall from quite distance.
She's got rockets to get her up the way.
She's got rockets to help her, and the rockets aren't like blasting big; like they're just guiding.
She's low on fuel. But there is a floatiness to them still, you know. And when that fall would have killed her if it wasn't low gravity.
Yeah,
it wasn't like boom. It was like ooh.
I think they've stopped a wee bit, in fact.
I think to some extent they've stopped giving a shit about, because there's a bit on the Agatha King where its engines are out, and still people are still walking around with gravity and stuff.
A little bit, yeah.
I think they're sort of they're doing it as a, which I'm fine with.
Yeah, they're sort of balancing dramatic effect with reality to some extent.
Yeah, and well, when in the scene with Spy and the one like ensign or whatever shoots the other guy, Ensign Lohman.
I remember her name earlier, and I've forgotten it because she was quite
cute. I find her very attractive.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, well, yeah. There's a character coming up who I also find very attractive for a similar reason. It's just, she looks similar.
I knew you guys would say that. Well, just
what am I talking about?
Yeah. She's coming up, the ensign that shot the dude.
Newswoman. I don't want to say too much.
Oh, not in this. I understand.
Not in this episode. Yeah. Larson. Is it Ensign Larson? Woman looks a lot. Well, not in reality, but in this, in the way she's her hair is and everything. In this, she looks a lot like this other woman who's coming in.
She's got a large nose. I've got a little bit of a fetish for a strong nose.
I like a big nose. Yeah, I quite like this.
I like the bit where she shoots the guy and he's just like.
And then the blue fades away. Yeah.
Zoom and enhance.
I'm showing everybody a picture of this lady as she looks normally, and then as she looks very fucking scared and what have you in the show. There you go. So everybody can see the two pictures. There you go. The viewer has seen those pictures now.
Okay, so thank you, viewer.
Looks like. So she's the one that lets Gazi get away, basically. She shoots his restraint.
I think there's an implied.
She's been killed before he left, mercy killing. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, actually, so on that scene as well, he's aggressive. Like is he aggressive because he'd been proto-molecule? Does the proto-molecule turn you into aggressive?
Well, it seems to have different effects, but they seem to have all gone mad. But remember, the way they got the proto-molecule was an accidental exposure to the proto-molecule from the hybrids, which were programmed to be soldiers.
Okay.
It's not like Eros or Dooley or whatever where I think
it's intended that the hybrids as a weapon also spread the proto molecule. That seems to be implied a few times.
It doesn't, yeah, it's definitely implied, yeah.
That's why
there isn't a hybrid that gets onto the ship though.
No, there is.
No.
Well, a hybrid pod.
The pod gets partially hit, but not destroyed, and it splats onto the hull.
Oh, does it?
Makes sense.
Oh,
so some proto molecule gets in that way.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there wasn't one aimed at the Agatha King. That was just...
No, it wasn't aimed at it, but I thought maybe it just hit it.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't aiming, it just hit it by accident.
Yeah. Well, apparently Larson's part is bigger in the books, and it's a man. Oh, and some other differences, but I'm not going to spoil stuff because it's connected with. Yeah.
Okay.
I wonder why she had a name when she's only in it for a second. Because the guy she shoots has got a named character as well. But for, differences between the book and. Larson shoots the dude. Larson realizes she's infected. She's not very happy. you can imagine.
I just had a thought of something, right? Maybe there's a bit of narrative sort of license going on here, because when you're first introduced to Spy, he's like floating away, and then some sort of inertia happens, and then he sort of comes back down. Do you remember that bit?
He pulls himself back down.
Yeah, I think he just pulls himself. Yeah.
He's attached to the bed by the restraint anyway, so he can pull against that to move him.
He's unconscious and he wakes up like that. And when he wakes up, I think he tugs himself off.
Yes. And to me, I almost kind of feel like, as you say, like it does seem like they're paying less attention to the gravity. And
there's lots of little bits of blood floating and stuff, though. So.
Yeah. There's little bits here and there, but like... it's a little bit like, with stage theater where sometimes they'll take liberties with realism for the sake of a thing. Well, I think there's a little bit of this going on here where the scene starts with like a low gravity prop or like something that like with Spy being floating away. Then he pulls himself down, and then the scene sort of has a natural gravity to it, right? With the assistance of mag boots and things. And it'll
I'm just wondering if we hear the mag boots like we do normally. I don't
know. I was listening for the mag boots. All right, okay. You know. And yeah, you do hear all the mag boots, but like it's like, so it could kind of happen, but at the same time, for the sake of narrative or for the sake of filming or for the sake of telling the story, they act as if there's gravity, even though if it was, you know, like there's a little bit of like, you know, a little bit of poetic license type of thing going on. Does that make sense? It's just like, okay, this ship doesn't really have gravity. We're going to act out the scene as if it does have gravity, but like that little inertious thing at the beginning.
It's to remind you that we don't have gravity.
like it's you know. And then the other little props that are maybe a bit easier.
There is there is a floatiness to them. They're not, you know, but it's a subtle one, probably done by the actors rather than any special effects or anything.
When they shoot the angry dude, he does kind of stand there.
So it's It gives you a reminder, and also as like as a side note, people would tie their hair back a lot in space anyway.
Mm. Yes.
Well, in the military, this is military. You know, they'd all have their hair tied up anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's but like I suppose that's a little bit like with the belters as well. It's like if they shave the sides, then the hair, you know, like what happens on the top can be a bit more, you know, fun. But like if you just had a full head of hair,
is that like that was... you party at the back, business in the front, is it?
Sort of that kind of thing, yeah. Well, party on top for me. right. So we have bounced around, haven't we? But it all sort of leads to the same place. Wynn seems rather. I can't help but think the Spy when he was taking apart the reactor and for some reason shut down his comms, but it was like he was doing a Twitch live stream of it. Like it's like
He basically
it does show before Naomi even says anything, it does show that he's deliberately locked it to be a one way transmission on the little screens thing.
But it essentially is, he's streaming to the
he's live streaming
a wide band.
Yeah, because he's sending out a message to warn everybody to keep away from the ship because he's going to blow it up.
Yeah.
I love that he's all like, I'm going to do this, blah, 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 blah. And then in approximately, I don't know, actually. It's going to blow up soon, go away.
Yeah.
So Spy gives his life, basically. But just,
he might survive. He's a spy. He can fake stuff like that.
Fake stuff.
Anyway, but what I liked about it is that it was in the recap at the beginning of this episode was how happy he was to find out that Abisarala
when he's failing to give his last words, and he says a name, and I assume that's
Abisarala's son.
Yeah, and he's saying, I finally paid you back.
Yeah.
And Abisarala's there. Abisarala sees it, and she's, you know, tearing up, understandably, because they had a bit of a thing going on as well, friendship or flirty friendship or whatever.
I see, like, Abisarala doesn't do much this episode, but she has a lot of emotions bestowed upon her.
Because
also, you got Bobby, for the first time in your life, please shut the fuck up, madam.
Mom, I shut the fuck up. It's a wee bit. There's a few bits in this where I'm like, the dialogue isn't as good. But almost everything good about this episode is non-dialogue-y anyway.
No, I disagree.
No, I never said everything, but almost everything.
No, my favourite thing in this episode is one line that we'll get to.
Okay. What is it?
This is Amos. He's my best friend in the whole world.
And
Amos's face, his realization that somebody thinks I'm their best friend.
Yeah. And also, somebody's just helped you to save their child. You would be.
And then when he takes May's hand, like just the gentleness with which he takes her hand, it's just that whole scene fucking destroys me.
Yeah,
and then the bit, of course, like you're not that guy. I am that guy.
Yeah,
yeah. I knew that was coming. But
oh, yeah. You know it's coming, but you want it. You're waiting for it.
Well, not everybody gets the comeuppance in this show until, you know, sometimes not at all, sometimes not at all, sometimes not to the future. And it was good to see Strickland get his comeuppance there and then.
It was good to see Strickland get his comeuppance and good to see Mao be made to kneel.
Holden brings him in and makes him fucking kneel in front of him, like Sarala. It's like,
but no, that line, that whole section. This is Amos. He's my best friend in the whole world. It's Amos's fucking. It's what that means to Amos and what you know it means to Amos. That's what makes it so impactful.
The Prax Amos sort of bromance is kind of my It's a real highlight for me. Because it's so genuine and it awakens something in Amos that like he kind of realizes that everyone is kind of morally imperfect, so there needs to be a part of him that thinks for himself. You know, like he can't just hook onto someone else's and he is the moral guidance in this sort of.
Well, there's the stuff from the previous episode where he realizes the not necessarily positive effect he's had on Prax. And I think that makes him realize something about himself. And maybe I don't need to be this tough guy all the time. I think there's that going on. But I think the important thing here is this is probably his first, like, I've said this before, but equal friendship. He's not subservient to Prax. Prax isn't subservient to him. They genuinely, you know, give and take.
Yeah, yeah. But it's also a bit like the thing that he said, that Amos said a while ago, that there's, you know, three people in this world. Is it good people, bad people, and people that need protecting, or
something along those lines? People who need killing, people who need protecting, and something else. I forget.
And I think Prax sort of, in some ways, understands that too, but at the same time, doesn't mind being a person.
I think Prax. I think the presence of Prax in Amos's life, because Amos sees things very black and white, right? And you know, as per that little thing he said, and I think Prax deconstructs that somewhat and makes Amos realize that actually it's not that simple, because Prax doesn't fit those categories. Prax is, you know, he makes those categories look as reductive as they are. Because Amos is learning from Prax. Amos depends on Prax in some ways, you know.
Yeah, but it's a mutual codependence. Are we losing Drew?
We've lost Drew, or we're losing him. No, is he back?
Is it me you're looking for?
Well, Chris and I are green on my board. You're amber at the moment.
I was green, but I've gone. Am I okay now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're okay now.
Okay, so sorry. What were you saying?
Yeah. That the relationship, it's very much like they depend on each other.
Yeah, it's an equal friend. Yeah, for the first time in his life, it's an equal friendship where he doesn't expect the other person to make all the decisions or guide him or be the boss kind of thing. It's an actual friendship. I think it's his first. Maybe not first in his life, but for a long time, first actual friendship. I think that's really important to him, and I think it's changing him.
Yeah. And I mean, if I was in practice situation, I'd be incredibly grateful to Amos and for all the help. Even the bit where they're going into IO for the first time, and it's like, it's cut, take cover.
Take cover first, then shoot.
He takes it early on. He takes a bullet for Prax.
He literally does. But it's nice to see Prax, who is not a natural like tough guy, actually.
Well, it's his kid. You know, you can see. Yeah. You can see why. You know,
he he does everything, like literally everything he can to.
And then May says, "Why didn't you come get me?"
It's like, "What is this? What is this? I'm fucking here, aren't I?"
motherfucker! Just in time.
But I don't know if you noticed episodes and episodes ago when I can't remember the context, but in the labs where they're doing the stuff to the children. There's like drawings on the wall, and one of them is very clearly a drawing of Prax by May.
Yeah, so it's an astronaut with a fishbowl helmet
holding a planet.
You see that when they leave as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So May, And like Prax has said a few times about, was it very early on when he's on the ship, he says something about like the stories I usually tell Maya about, you know, about plants, and she pretends to care. Like, yeah, I'm gonna have such stories to tell her now. And you get, I imagine him like telling her all his adventures basically, and how much of a hero she's going to be to him. He's going to be to her, and all that. It's all lovely.
And the interesting thing, of course, now is that May and Mao, they're kind of friends in a way, aren't they?
Do you want that kind of a friend?
Well, she doesn't know that Mao. She doesn't know how much Mao's involved, and she doesn't know how just went, oh yeah, fuck it, use her. She doesn't know that part either.
I mean, as far as she's concerned, like, they may have been a bit mean, but they were trying to cure her illness. That's her only understanding of the situation.
Yeah, I suppose it is.
She has no idea what's going on, really.
Yeah, whatever happened to Katoa, she's not 100% connecting that with her.
I mean, she will have. Situation. I think she did see the
disabled
person. She
was starting to get scared at the end, you know.
Yeah.
Because they strapped her into the...
She was definitely concerned. She was distrustful and concerned, but, you know, she's a child.
Yeah, that's the thing that I'm a bit curious about. So at the end of the last episode, we saw her getting strapped into a proto machine.
Yeah, but then the Rocinante
came down.
So, literally,
the nick of time.
Literally. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, literally. Chris's
disappointment that we're not getting.
Yeah, we're not getting
Proto May. She can fix the proto molecule.
Well, at the moment we're not getting Proto May. Okay, sorry.
Probably for the best, since we know what happened to Proto Jacoa. Yeah.
Katoa.
Don Quixote.
It's funny you should say Chakotay, because I was looking at, I can't remember what I was doing. It was one of those Wikipedia hopping things, and I came across a film by Alex Cox. Have you heard of Alex Cox? He did Repo Man and some other things. He's into cult film, and he's also made a few. Anyway, point is,
he used to present Movie Drome on Channel 4.
Yeah, that's Alex Cox as well. Yeah, same Alex Cox.
That was good. Movie Drome was fucking
it was,
great.
It was a good thing. But also, before I forget, my point was that, one of Alex Cox's films had Robert Beltran in it, who played Chakotay.
Oh,
and that's weird that you brought that up today. And, you know, I just spotted him earlier.
What are you eating, Chris?
I'm eating just an oaty bar.
Oh, nice. Scottish oaty bar, apparently.
Cocoa and orange.
Quite nice.
I had a pepperoni pizza before the show. I would have been eating it during the show if Chris had been on time, you know.
Sorry, I was just readjusting my camera.
Oh, okay. I had for breakfast a bat with a cheese and onion sandwich filler on it. That was very nice. And then I had oat cakes half an hour later because I was hungry. A couple of oat cakes with melted cheese, Staffordshire oat cakes, like melted cheese. And as soon as I finished them, and anybody who's had Staffordshire oat cakes, they're quite fucking filling. As soon as I made them, my sister went, I've left you some bacon sandwiches, which were two bats of bacon and eggs. So I forced them in as well. I feel sick, but it was great.
Apart from the eggs, none of that's filling. I mean, bacon doesn't fill you. I could just eat bacon all day long. I could just sit and eat bacon constantly. Yeah.
It's like crisps. It just makes you hungrier.
Yeah.
Sorry, just like crisps?
Yeah, crisps. If you eat crisps, like Chris, you feel hungrier. Not like crisps, no. Chris fills you right up.
I just realised earlier when I used your initials when I was talking to typing something to Drew, and I said something blah 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 CW, and I just realised that your initials are content warning.
Content warning, yeah.
Also, the TV channel, the CW.
I've never known what that was. Really, is that cable channel in America? And I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's cable channel. They have stuff like, they had The 100 on it, and stuff like The Flash and the other DC TV shows. It's very sort of YA focused, and
that's what I thought.
YA
stuff.
So I've watched a lot of CW stuff.
Okay,
so what's going to happen with Jules?
Can I go back in time a little bit here in this show? I mean, our show. So, what's your theory about? What was your theory that was, you know, undone by the proto molecule? Or, well, you know, maybe not, because we know the planet.
What is it up to?
What is this thing going to do? What do you reckon is going to happen next with this proto molecule, the big proto molecule thing? the Venus protomolecule eruption, ejection, ejaculate.
I mean, I've got a boring answer. Which
is boring answer?
We want all your theories. We want them all.
It's just going to, it's a battleship, and it's just going to start fighting everyone and everything it sees and dissembling it and cannibalizing it. And
what, like the
Borg? Entire of the Borg, and then the belt, and then Mars and Earth have to come together to fight a common enemy, or to wrestle a common enemy, the protomolecule. But I don't know. It doesn't feel like the Expanse is going to be that straightforward. Maybe it might just be that I don't know what's happening on Venus, whether or not Venus will continue to be a fixture in the show, or whether or not all of the interesting stuff on the protomolecule is now in that big new ship, and whether or not that ship will then travel the solar system, cannibalizing other stuff, and then building on top of that, and then it will have some sort of...
Do you think, as it destroys other ships and stuff, will it just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger?
Yeah. Like a snowball when you roll it downhill.
Yes.
It's just, you know... And it's just becoming, yeah, like maybe Borg-like, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
It could also be that it just becomes like another faction. You've got Mars, the Belt, UNN, Protomolecule. It just becomes like, you know, and...
Problem with just... that is then we've got two Team Blue.
Earth can be Team Green, right?
Purple. Well, green makes sense, yeah.
Purple. Yeah, or the protomolecule could change its color. Like that looks, you know, it could be, you know, what color is belt? The belt, are they black and white?
I suppose so.
That's a good point. Yeah, the belt doesn't really have a. I associate the belt with yellow. I think they have more yellow on their
red. I was going to say red for some reason. Yeah, but that's Mars. The Mars color. Yeah.
Well.
Red is red associated a little bit with anarchism.
Or red and black. No.
Red black, and black, sort
of. Red's communism.
Red's black communism, black. Really. So, yes. So, you know, anarcho-syndicalism and stuff like that sort of takes place.
Yeah, but it's the black flag that kind of makes it anarcho.
Yeah, black flag is more like the belt, I suppose. So black, yeah. Also the black of space and all that, you know.
Yeah, black makes sense.
Yeah.
Pentaloda!
I mean, black and
Chris,
yellow.
Chris is not allowed to watch that GIF yet.
Say no.
Okay. Is it for
it's got a character
episode?
In it he doesn't know, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
The GIF doesn't give much away other than there's another person.
It doesn't give much away, but it's a great fucking moment. I know
yeah, the actual
moment
in the show, yeah.
Oh,
that's
that
a long
dropping
way off,
down.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, longish.
Also,
soonish, but not.
Yeah.
Protomolecule hybrids are going to be fuckers to kill if there's any number of
them.
They
kill them. We saw that in the episode.
Yeah, they killed them. But
I don't think they're that hard. I think the problem is like if because Wynn keeps saying only one needs to make it, which implies to me that the hybrids spread the proto molecule. It's not really about them as weapons or whatever in that sense. But I mean, they're harder to kill than a person. But like, it does look like if you blow their head off, they're dead. So you know, if a tank shoots one, it's probably dead. If you nuke them, you know, they're definitely dead. Like,
if you just nuke them, just stick a nuke in it. But, like, that's pretty intense. So, like,
they're probably not harder to kill than, or not hugely harder to kill than a marine.
An armored
power armor.
Marine, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, that's,
yeah, right,
that's,
right.
That's pretty, that would be.
But if you send Bobby into a city, She would take out the police force and the security people and stuff like that quite easily. You know, she's going to be more than a match for them.
If her
mission was to go into a city and plant a bomb or kill loads of civilians for some reason, whatever, there's not much could stop her without the military getting involved. You know.
Yeah. So is Bobby exceptionally an exceptionally good Marine, or is she?
I think she's one of the best, but I mean, they are all pretty good.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think because she's quite young, and she might she's not like grizzled or nothing. But then physical fitness is probably pretty peak, right?
Yeah. I suspect she is. So, I mean,
I don't know what the peak Marine age would be. Would it be like 25?
I mean, again, I hate to sound like a military nerd, but it depends whether we're talking about like US style Marines or like Royal Marine style Marines, which are like completely different things. Same origins, but completely different.
Well, I'm talking like an elite soldier for soldiering.
Yeah, because the Marines in this show seem like they're modeled after the US Marines, and the US Marines are better trained than the general military, but they're not elite. They're not like commandos or anything.
Okay. Oh,
they're not special. So they're not special forces or anything like that. They are just very well trained normal soldiers.
Right. Okay. But presumably for soldiering of any type, there's a ideal age bracket, right?
I think I would imagine, for anything on active, whatever, 20s and 30s, I would think.
Mm. I think 30, I don't know about 30s, right?
Like, well, you've got a balance 30s. Of experience and,
I think for like very specialist, like spec opsy stuff, I think they tend a bit older because they tend to come from the other. They do well in the Marines, and then they recruit them into, whatever.
Yeah, so special forces tend to be a bit older.
Yeah,
but that's
just why David Boreanaz can still get away with playing the part he's playing. In that show.
Yeah, I imagine with special forces, there's a lot of like psychology and experience that come into play.
Yeah, but if, I mean, you can be. I'm not the best example, but you can be very fit into your 40s. Even into your 50s,
Even Mike Tyson, when we saw him in a fight, like for a man of his age with a walking stick.
did you watch the fight with Paul?
I saw the highlights, but
I don't watch boxing anymore because I find it upsetting. But my niece mentioned she was going to watch it, so I was curious and I watched it, and it was just it was kind of sad.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Tyson will still kick my ass, so I'm not,
beat the living shit out of any of us. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe all three of us. Do you reckon all three of us could beat Mike Tyson at his current age?
No.
If we were stacked on top of each other in a big trench coat? Or...
If you give us knives, then yes. Otherwise, no.
Okay, we'll have to sneak knives in.
Do you know, there was a thing, this came up on Red Letter Media, right? So I'm not a gun nut and I'm not a military nut. But Red Letter Media, they review bad videos, right? Mm. And one of their videos was a police training video called Something Something Edged Weapons. It's like training for American police how to deal with knives, basically. And I can't remember the exact numbers, but in order, if you're a cop and there's somebody coming at you with a knife, this is the distance they worked out where you've got a 50% chance of surviving the encounter, and it's something like 30 feet.
That's quite a distance.
Yeah, it's ridiculous because all the knives got it because when knife fights are shown on film stuff, it's all very but what you do with a knife is you run in and stab as many times as you can. You die from it's blood loss. You don't go for the heart or the throat or any of that. You just stab and you die of blood loss. So yeah, it's got to be for the cop to have a 50-50 chance of killing the dude before he gets to you and stabs you to death. It was something around like 15, 30 feet, something in that ballpark, which is, it's kind of shocking.
Is the gun in your hand or is it in the holster?
No, this is guns holstered, So this is to go from, and have a clean shot and,
See, I've always worked out that, I've always thought that the holster is a tricky biscuit, right? Because you can't have like a ready to go holster like the Wild West kind. Because it's like, anyone can off the subway could just grab your gun and just be like. But then if it's too clipped in, it's like presumably if you need your gun, it's an emergency. You need your gun fast. So I don't they've obviously worked this out, but like how the right amount of securing of a gun. Because you do see on films.
Well, there's the TV show The Watchmen. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Very good fucking show. It's made by an idiot, and he's a very like mainstream liberal.
I'm going to guess from you saying this thing's called The Watchman, that it's an old guy with a flat cap and a lantern, and he's
and a mug of tea
and a mug of tea. Yeah,
I mean that is what they're named after. But yeah, a TV show, it's made by an idiot, but it ends up being like a deep critique of neoliberalism, despite the fact that he's an idiot neoliberal. So it's an interesting... I posted a video about it a bit ago. It's a really interesting watch. It's actually very, very good. But in that, the police have to radio in for permission to unlock their guns.
Oh.
Which is seen as a... Yeah.
Do we have to do that in this country?
No.
they're not.
Regular police aren't armed.
They're not armed. But I saw an armed policeman in the airport just being a policeman, and he had like a big like a rifle kind of thing. And I thought,
yeah,
well, I thought they had like an SMG, like an MP5 or something.
When I was in Liverpool, a lot of the cops, because there'd been a lot of gang violence in Liverpool, like drug gang. A lot of the police there walked around with MP5s. Yeah,
it might have been an MP5 with a shoulder.
And harassed us.
They extended stock. Yeah, it's almost it's MP7s we use apparently in this country.
Okay,
still heckler.
But yeah, cock. I mean, I think
heckler and cock. Like... You know, that's quite fitting for the police, I think.
they have to get permission to go into a situation with guns, but when you're in the situation, I think it's up to which individual. Blah blah. Whether they.
Yeah. I always wonder, like, what a day in the life of armed police is like.
They do have heckler and cock. I don't know if you heard that, but he made a weird noise. Heckler and cock G36s as well, which I think are a carbine. That's an assault rifle, in fact.
Yeah, we should not have armed police.
The good old truncheon, that'll do it.
Well, I mean, if your only way of stopping people is killing them, and it's not really much of a police force, is it?
No.
What's the point? You know, people say, your cops don't even have guns. It's like, if people aren't going to be... The only way a policeman's a policeman is if you accept that they're a policeman, you accept the authority.
Yeah.
You know, the violence part is very... All you do is create another gang, you know?
But I think then Americans will go, well, how would they stop an armed bank robbery? Well, let the bank robbery happen and then catch them, because then less people are likely to die that way.
Yeah, you're not going to kill the bystanders as well as the gang and
also,
the
I don't think the police.
And...
This will probably be very controversial for anybody right leaning. I don't think the police should be allowed to exceed the speed limit. So many people fucking die when they're chasing somebody.
Mm.
Do detect things with stuff and catch them late. I mean, the crime solving rate across the country is something like 5% anyway. So, you know, losing one more is
but
not
it's all
make a fucking
but
difference.
It's all optics, isn't it? That's the thing. It's and obviously films and television have got a lot to answer for. You know,
I mean, ambulances and fire engines absolutely should go as fast as they need to go. That's a different thing. But the police,
I very rarely ever see them go faster than the speed limit, though. Ambulance and fire.
Well, it's safer to drive at a reasonable speed anyway, isn't it? You want to get there in one piece still. You know, you're no use to the person in trouble if you end up crashing every time you go out.
Certainly not, like, I've never, like, seen a fire engine just whiz past, like, going, oh my god, that was fast. Like, maybe a bit over the speed limit, perhaps, without me... You know,
oh yeah, they're not going to do, like, 70 and a 30, but...
No.
Yeah.
So... I just imagine they don't look at the speedometer. You know, they're more like they're paying attention
to the road. Yeah, they're paying attention to the
road.
Make sure it's safe to drive as fast as they can drive, basically.
But like high speed police chases, they kill bystanders. Yeah, and the people they're chasing will crash and it bite you. No, what's the point of that? Do police work and get them later.
Mm.
Yeah, and I mean it's not like
but they don't want to these days, do they? They want this the pre, you know, that's why they want AI to do
crime.
And of course, AI trials have shown that apparently poor people, and especially poor black people, are very much likely to be criminals. I wonder why. That's not a bias at all, is it?
We haven't learned from that time. When was it? Microsoft did like an old school phony AI personality, and it ended up becoming extremely racist. Really
quickly. Well, a couple of those have happened. You know,
it's racism
and classism is baked in because that's the constant propaganda.
So, you know? so a lot of people drink
the Kool-Aid, as it were.
So is the proto-molecule going to be against, like, prejudice against the Belters because it's largely disassembling Earth and Mars?
No, because Eros, it's mostly Eros. Made up of Belters.
Yeah, it's made up of Belters,
mostly. Oh, long chalk. So maybe the jellyfish will be a Belter allied weapon.
I mean, if anything, the jellyfish is going to be because it's made up of 100,000 of the poorest people in the solar system.
It's not even just belters, it's like the most downtrodden,
the bottom of the rung. Yeah, so if anything, the jellyfish is going to be it's going to be Karl Marx, it's going to be a communist.
Oh, interesting.
It's got to go around all the planets instituting dictatorship of the proletariat.
No, prototariat.
I thought that's what Drew was actually going to say.
No, that's beneath me.
It's not beneath me.
he's not that guy, but he is that guy.
I don't know if you're just like, see, now the way that you've just explained that makes it very, very, like, not likely, but very plausible to me that, yeah, like, that could be the case, that it becomes a belter allied force for whatever reason. But then you wouldn't have just given me that bit, would you? You wouldn't have just given me that information.
I've nudged you in directions in the past.
Yeah, but usually that direction is away from something.
No, not always. No, towards sometimes.
Well,
we like to keep you on your toes.
Yeah.
Well, you certainly do that. yeah. But I mean, Spy could.
I will say, and this is a little bit spoilery, but fuck it, it's kind of anti-spoilery. If we did this podcast for 7 hours and you did nothing but guesses about what the proton molecule is going to do next, you would be wrong.
Yeah. I've just noticed I've unevenly did my beard.
Shall I get the picture up again?
That's literally been bugging me, and I couldn't work out what it was.
Just thought of a great idea. Have a Hitler haircut and a Hitler moustache, but off-centre. That here. That'd be fucking hilarious. It's just me that finds that funny, okay? That is hilarious to me.
I mean, it might be hilarious if he didn't run the greatest PeerTube server on the Fediverse, right?
What, Hitler?
I was going to say, he's
turned his life around.
I'll be back in 2 seconds.
Oh, I've done a frage, haven't I? I mean, you don't want a Hitler leading the captaining the ship.
You don't, the idea of the off-center Hitler mustache being a committed, you know, just like, oh, fuck the mustache up, but living with it. That tickles me.
I mean, if anyone's going to try that, it's going to have to be you, because...
I don't have enough hair to do the Hitler haircut. Okay, I need a cup of tea. It's the bacon. I need another cup of tea. I'll be right back.
So, okay, So Drew says if we were here for 7 hours, I would still never guess what it was.
He'd never guess what it was going to do. I think he's right. But I think,
oh my God.
I think it is very spoilery to give you that much information, even though it's kind of negative information. But by him saying it's not spoilery, it kind of isn't, because there's no space to fill either. So,
okay, so
he's not giving you the shape of what it will do by saying that. He's just giving you that you won't fucking guess.
You wouldn't get, yeah.
Well, I don't know. It depends how. I mean, 7 hours, I reckon.
It's not unguessable.
Yeah, it's not
unguessable.
Totally unguessable, no.
Okay, so are the clues there, and I'm just like, or is it no? So it's completely new information as to
it's not in the sense that, like, when it happens, it adds up, but you don't have, because the proton molecule is not the most communicative thing in the world so far. The dribs and drabs you've been given, they make sense given what the outcome is, but I don't think you can get to the outcome from what the proton molecule says, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah, so yeah, even if. Even if I was to like be an AI pattern recognition machine,
Jesus.
My favorite AI trick is asking it how many R's strawberry has. It never gets it. It cannot count the number of R's in strawberry.
See, I'm not having a go at you specifically.
I'm making my thing.
But all these people that are saying, "Oh yeah, it's terrible, and it's blah, it's awful," they all keep trying it. You're still destroying the planet by using those resources by playing around with it. But that's the trick of it. It's a bit like the greenwashing by saying everybody should recycle, you know, a tiny little amount every week. corporations are destroying, you know, are ruining and wasting, you know, 10 times as much per person, but they're getting you to do your little bit and make it all, putting it all on your shoulders, like carbon, you know, reduction and recycling. And it's like that with the ChatGTP or whatever. And people say, oh yeah, it's terrible, isn't it? And then journalists are going, it's a terrible thing, blah, blah, blah. And then they'll go, well, I tried this with it and it did this. It's like, no, it's not about how inept it is. It's about the fact that it's fucking using vast resources for what it does. It is a massively inefficient tool. And it's not good. But the thing is, though, that a lot of the things that these systems do already exist. We've had, you know, AI in the computery sense for a long time. Algorithms and stuff like that exist. You know, algorithms that are left to run riot and get pushed and tweaked slightly, like social media ones and whatever, or things that are trying to work out polling and everything. All that stuff's existed, but putting it into a like a modern day Eliza has suddenly made everybody think it's just a little toy in the desktop, because all they see is a little interface on them or a web browser. They don't connect that with the vast amount of resources that's being used to make this thing work.
I think that applies to the cloud in general. It's kind of invisibilized the resource usage of the things that we use.
Yeah, that's it. That's why I'm comparing it with you know, climate change or whatever, you know, and recycling and all that stuff. It's the same sort of thing. It's like pushing a little bit onto the shoulders of everybody to say, oh, well, everybody's got to play their part. But, you know, the tiny bit we do is, you know, for every person that does their tiny bit, there's 100 times as much damage being done by big companies anyway. It's all bollocks. Anyway. So I'm not having a go at you personally, but I would prefer that you didn't play around with it. I'd prefer nobody played around with it, because that's the problem, is they've made it look like a toy that is just a little toy on your desktop. And it's not a little toy on your desktop. It's a massive fucking thing that's people are trying to start new nuclear reactors to run and stuff, you know?
I mean, I'll work out how many
water supplies are being destroyed and all that sort of thing, you know. Sorry, what did you say? I was too busy being serious.
It's like seven, I think.
Seven? I'll work out how many R's are in store.
Oh, yeah, one day, when you get it, yeah.
One day, yeah. So President Mann plays a big role.
Yeah,
this is
another big one. No, oh, yeah. No, that.
Oh, we get a good line there as well.
Oh yeah, he just parrots the last thing. If the last person he talked to was a janitor, he'd be
exposing the virtues of a fucking mop.
Yeah.
Okay, it's just him parroting you because you talked to him last. If he'd spoke to a janitor, he'd be passionately declaiming about a fucking mop, and he delivers it with such pith as well. It's like he's not fucking wrong. Like
Drew, we're losing you.
Much
again,
as Aaron Wright is.
Hang on a sec. I don't know. It says you're green. Oh, no, you're red now.
No, you're red. Yeah, code red.
I think it must be his internet connection at this point, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's going to come back. There we go.
Yeah, here he is.
On VPN, that seems to... Jitsi does not get along with the VPN.
Okay.
Right, I've lost Chris as well.
No, he's coming back to take his place, I think.
Oh, is he just doing that deliberately? Right, okay. At the moment, we're doing a sort of... What's that called, the Brady Bunch thing at the moment, you know?
In that moment, like, Aaron Wright, he's not a goodie, but in that moment, like, I'm on his side. Like, he's so right
well,
about...
He's literally pointing out everything we've been talking about for the past, few months. Is how empty a vessel this guy is,
and then the part after that is important as well.
It's very important because he basically does he does his version of the speech by saying, "Ah, right, this is, you know, we've caught the culprit, blah blah blah." But then he just goes, "And now it makes me look good again." It's like, did you not listen to what Aaron Wright just said about you, you fucking prick?
But that's an important moment for a Christian lady because, she's all smug Christian. I've won this one. I took the moral high ground and I won, and then she's quite naive in that moment, I think, and then he disavows her of that by being a bigger prick than she thought he was.
Yep.
And she's, you know, she's getting a bit of character growth from that, I think.
Very much. And also, she brings up the thing from before. She just, it's like she didn't really admit to herself what a prick he was in the past.
Yeah.
And how bad it had been. And she's like, you knew that was going to happen. You did that. And, you know, the martyrs solidified the she's like, just putting it all together. You'd think in the years in between, you'd think she would have. But I think she was lying to herself. You know?
For me, that's the difference. I've always found it hard to articulate why Dawes is okay. Because Dawes will sacrifice people and so on. Mm. But I think there's, like with Dawes, I think there's an honesty to it. Whereas with President Mann, there's a duplicity all the time.
Yeah, it's all about his own optics.
And really, it's not. Yeah, it's about image. It's about him looking good rather than actually doing good.
Yeah. But the thing with Mann, right, is when he says the thing at the end, my legacy was going to be a war that killed a hopeless war that killed millions. Ehrenreich's now taking the fall for
Yeah, no, it's right? all on Ehrenreich's shoulders.
Does he say that as a fuck you to Christian lady who's like?
No, I think I don't think he even realizes that he's like thrown it in her face, and he's just like, oh my god, this is great. I've got this has worked out for me.
Yeah.
But let's be fair, Ehrenreich did the exact, did the same thing to the Secretary General a few times and in the past few episodes as well. So, you know, they're both as bad as each other in that respect. You know, like the thing about the strike on the Martian platforms and all that sort of stuff, you know, he tries to manipulate it in the same way.
I think the big difference between Ehrenreich and President Mann is I think Ehrenreich is genuinely committed to something. I think he genuinely does believe, in the same way some Martians believe the reverse, that like it is ultimately a battle between Earth and Mars, and he's on Earth's side and he wants Earth to win. And also he's smarter. He's smarter than President Mann.
He's got his own plans. He's not literally going along until somebody else gives him an idea. Yeah. But that's what makes him. That's what makes the Gillis easy to manipulate. For Ehrenreich,
I do feel like that criticism of President Mann, though, I do feel hits me. Like when I'm trying to decide on a political issue, like I'll watch a video or read an article or whatever. I'm like, yeah, that's a convincing argument. That's my mind made up. And then I watch something on the other side, and I'm like, yeah, no, that's a convincing argument.
Yeah, no, I'm terrible for that. Yeah,
it's hard to hold enough information in your head at once. Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. You're only human, as they say.
But so this President Mann laid bare.
Yep. And who's he got on his side now? Is the question.
But he is in the way because the Expanse's political system works differently from ours. But it's obviously it's a pastiche. It's a critique of our political system. And like Mr. President Mann is like he's the perfect politician.
Mm.
Like oblivious, no ideas of his own, just represents something, you know, optical.
Starmer,
Starmer. Well, Starmer
before he started being found out, anyway.
Yeah, started Starmer, Biden, Obama. He's all of those. Yeah,
yeah. It's
Bush and Trump as well.
Yeah, I suppose so. Although Bush and Trump had a bit more character to them, right? Like they weren't as You know.
They're not afraid of charisma on the other side.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what? I can't remember what. Like, I think Bush was given an.
I was going to start saying some German phrases there, but I think I better not be seen to say them, especially not with the greyness making it look like I do have the moustache.
Ein kleiner
Nacht. I thought you were going to say something else, which was the actual phrase I was going to say, and I thought, no, let's not do that. Because that, for one thing, somebody will clip it out and fucking use it against me. You know.
I've lost my thread now.
Yeah. So what is she going to do? She's.
Oh yeah, this is really the fall of President Mann. Although,
not really, because he's now got rid of. He's got great. Rid of the other people.
He's all good.
I mean, it's
but he's got no help.
Well, it becomes sorry.
He's got no help. He's hopeless on his own.
Yeah, but well, technically, Abisarala's vindicated, and presumably she's coming back.
She's going to be the he's leader. Also, I mean, he's
got, those are just the characters we've seen. He's got, you know, presumably hundreds of advisors.
Yeah, though, there was always lots of people at those meetings and stuff. But he's lost Nguyen. He's lost Nguyen, and he's lost Erin Wright.
But Wynn might have been a good loss for him because Wynn was on the side of
yeah, he was on Mao. Erin Wright. He was Erin Wright's man, yeah.
Or Mao.
Yeah.
Mao's
or
man,
Mao, well, yeah. So it might be
they were all in cahoots, as they say.
Cahoots.
I like that word.
But what about Wynn now? Like, does he survive the Agatha King?
No, he's dead. No.
He got blown up with the spy bomb. Yeah.
I don't think Naomi and Alex bothered to try and get him off the ship.
Oh no!
I think they just left him. Well, if he had any ammunition, he would have hit them. He would have shot them. You know, it was only because he didn't have ammunition that they didn't get shot.
I do like Naomi's just like sort of petulant little. I should have let him shoot you as they leave. Like the ship's gonna fucking explode.
Yeah,
in the nuclear
boys. On the subject of Naomi and Alex, if we may, before that they have a sort of exposition dumpy scene, and again, it's not really the writing's not terrible, but it is a wee bit more.
Which bit's that?
This I'm just gonna get to it in a second. Mm-hmm. The writing's not terrible, but it does jar a little bit, and it smacks of exposition dump. But part of that is Naomi does it. You know, the actress does it better, you know, than he does. And so I'm starting to see the holes in Alex's actor. More and more as we've gone on to this rewatch.
I will say, like I've. Through all my watches of the show, I thought Alex was the weakest because everybody's so well cast and such a great actor, with the exception of Alex. And this isn't informed by learning he was Me Too. Hamish only told me this time through that he was Me Too. So it's not me retroactively going, oh, he's Me Too, therefore he's shit.
Yeah.
They're unconnected. They're
well,
unconnected
we've been analysing it more this time round, and that's why I've spotted it more and thought, ah. Because at first I thought, am I just being, because I learned that like fairly recently, am I thinking, am I layering that onto him, and it's like, no, Alex, well, it's the bit where they're talking about what happens if the protomolecule gets to Mars, you know, and it's like, oh, this, and Alex is like, he's, you know, it's as if Alex is reading off a checklist of things that go bad when the protomolecule comes around, but Naomi's sort of got a bit of emotion in it, that's it, and later on it's okay, because they're exposition dumping to Abisarala, which makes more sense because they're saying this thing about the protomolecule because Abisarala doesn't know this yet. You know, that's where that makes sense. But when it's just the two of them chatting to each other, it's like, who are they talking to? Who are they telling all this to? We know this, you know. But again, Dominique Tipper does a better job of, you know, making it sound like a conversation, basically, rather than a, here is the next line of information, you know.
But Alex just seems really weirdly intense when he says a lot of lines in this particular episode, but in general.
Well, that's what Drew said. He's not really got many emotions or many ways. You know, he doesn't. He's not got a lot of ways of acting. He overacts it when he's doing the gunning scene as well, as if he's in some sort of fucking World War II gun turret. You know, it's like, well, it is tense, but it's not. You know, you're not physically being moved around, you know. He kind of acts, instead of acting on a spectrum, he sort of acts in chunks at different places on that spectrum, you know.
It doesn't come from the scene, it just comes from how he thinks.
This scene it's going to be tense and battly, and this scene it's going to be information and chatty. Anyway.
One bit I do enjoy though is so when Bobby's shot Katoa's head out and she calls for assistance, she calls for a pickup. nobody's on the Rossi at that point. She's calling an empty ship. No, she's just true. Lying there. She's lying there on her back, can't fucking move, asking for rescue after heroically defeating this thing to lead it away from blah, blah, blah. And there's nobody on the fucking ship.
Yeah, she's nobody there to help her.
So are we still calling it the Rossi? They still call it the Rossi.
They still do, but at some point, on one of the screens, it was called the Penis Cantata. Contorta. But for the most part, yeah, everybody just keeps calling it the Rocinante. Yeah.
I think you would. It's hard.
Also, like, even that Martian kid corrects himself, says the Rocinante, I mean the Toshi. Yeah.
So they keep dead naming the ship.
Yeah.
Like Queen Charles, you know, it's like
It's Queen, absolutely Queen Charles, yeah.
Queen Charles, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll always yeah. What are they going to do with the kids on the ship?
Also, hang on, one bit this relates to the bit where Bobby's fighting the monster and they're jumping through that sort of industrial looking situation. I love the bit where she turns around and you see Katoa in her rear view.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
She's got a little...
such a lovely little moment because you spot it before
she's
done.
You've seen her using that little thing, but when she moves around, it moves with her. So it's obviously a two camera thing.
And you obviously, and as goes, an audience, you're like, Bobby, look out. Look behind you. Behind you.
I mean, the neck on the armor doesn't really move much, does it?
No, it doesn't seem to.
Probably not a ton, yeah.
Oh, a little bit. It's got a little bit, but like, you know.
But no, that's just you know, in terms of cinematography or whatever, whatever that is. But I love that bit. That's a lovely little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And it would, of course, Superarama would have a rear view camera.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be running away from stuff or stuff is going to be sneaking up on you.
Yep.
Because the thing is, if you're in a power armor and people are fighting you, with any degree of tactics, they're going to be like, well, we sneak up on the power armor and then do something from behind. Like,
yeah, I mean,
pull out the oxygen.
Small arms do nothing to it. You know, we saw that with those four civilians from the station.
That's why, shooting, like, fuck her.
She just goes, right, okay, well, they're shooting at me. I'm going to scan the area, count how many of them there are, look where they are. And, she goes, and then Holden says, have you got a count? Yeah, she goes, four. Clear.
But yeah, so T-Rex would have no chance against her.
But yeah, no, I am kind of wondering, like, are they going to drop the kids off at Tycho? Tycho daycare?
Well, they're from Ganymede, but the Ganymede station's dying, we've discovered, so who knows? Gosh, you take, I mean, it's something to take interest in, we know the welfare of the kids, but, like... Let's be honest, May is the only one that matters. You know, the others are there just for, like...
The other kids, Chris, name five of their top albums.
Yeah, exactly.
Kids' pop albums. I guess, like, I mean, but a lot of the Ganymede refugees go to Tycho.
Are they?
I think they're just going to be living on the Rossi.
Different places on the belt. Yeah, maybe they're going to have kids running about the Rocinante.
Yeah. I mean, they need more. I mean, they said at some point what the crew of the Touchy was supposed to be, like 30 or something. So a bit of
they carry 30 Marines, I think.
Oh, 30 Marines.
I think the crew was only about 10, you know.
Well, the kids could make that up.
The kids would make up the numbers, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you've seen Wesley Crusher and things like that. And, you know,
the kids will replace Alex.
Yeah, two of them operate the pedals, one of them does the view screen, and one of them operates the arm controls.
Yeah.
Anyway, trench coat.
What do you think about, generally, on the spaceships, when they're in their, like, position, their particular stations, they have the, basically the Android tablets as displays, and they can interact with. That seems quite plausible to me. That seems like a thing that makes sense.
Yeah, I like the idea of an operating system that's... So this is the thing, this is something that seems to come back into... I suspect it came into science fiction because that was the operating systems that were around at the time, but I also think it's something that should come back in reality operating systems, not in the way that they're trying to do it at the home yeah, better be careful how I put this. I'm not in favour of certain things. But the point is that if I've got two computers in my house, I would rather have a server and everything be a client. The idea you can, if you're watching a film, you should be able to just walk into the other room with a screen and just watch the rest of the film or whatever, you know. But that doesn't really exist, even on Linux, which has got Unix basis, doesn't really do that. But that's obviously because it's built a lot.
Like the hardware's not set up for it.
Your tablet. I'm obviously a phone, but you have your tablet and you go, boom, and it just comes up on there. That's good.
But the
problem is that all of that people go, oh, you can do that. You can do things like that if you use Apple or
the cloud.
In the cloud as well, yeah. But the problem is, that's all fueled by commercial, greed and exploitation. It's not fueled by user.
I don't think it'd be practical.
I think Apple's probably the closest to it. If you've got all the Apple stuff, like Paul the nerd. Hello, Paul the nerd. This is Paul the nerd episode. He drinks the whole Apple Kool-Aid. I don't know if I'm saying that. I don't even understand that American phrase. But he takes part. You know, he takes part of the whole Apple thing. Like he's gone to the point where he's got Apple phone, Apple tablet. The only thing he doesn't do, interestingly enough, is he's got a Kobo. But I don't think Apple have a dedicated reader, do they?
No, they don't have any reader.
Just be on the iPad or whatever.
Yeah,
that's a weird omission, isn't it?
They want you using the iPad.
Oh, right, yeah.
They want the one device for everything kind of thing. They drink the Kool-Aid. You probably do know. Like it comes. There was an American cult where they were a death cult, like a suicide.
That's
cult.
What it is. That's where it came from.
Is it the Jonestown?
Maybe that one. Yeah, possibly. I can't remember which is which. But yeah, I don't think it's practical necessarily to have because you're talking about mainframe and thin clients, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that necessarily be practical to have per household, but like per neighborhood or something. I think that could be.
I'd want to be completely under control of it myself.
I mean, you can always have that as an option, but I like the idea.
Jonestown Massacre, 1978. Yep, there you go. Well done. Right.
I like that. Yeah. I like the idea of that as a community service. Just the computing power.
Yeah.
If you think of all the computing
power that just sits there and does bugger all.
Exactly.
It'd be much smarter to have It's much smarter to have. If you imagine they kept the idea of mainframing.
Yeah.
But brought it down to, and mini computers, right? And brought that down to today's technology size. Basically, you could have, a server the size of a PC, a normal, a big-ish PC case that could run everything,
Yeah, I mean,
That doesn't sell a million gadgets and a million different chips, and it sells. They were never going to sell mainframe type computers as a. To every single household, essentially, so they split it all off. But I think they also destroyed a lot of the good things about it as well, So the internet still exists, we've got that. Mm. But then, the other thing, though. Sorry, Chris, I know you're trying to say something. But the thing about the internet, the problem with that is they've taken that away from being a server-side thing and made it a client-side thing. So your browser and your computer is doing all the fucking work for advertisers to advertise at you,
Yep.
Or you're spending a lot of power and effort keeping the advertisers out instead of the server doing it, where there's hardly any server side stuff anymore. It's all offloaded to the users.
Yeah, I mean the only thing that exists on the server really is the database itself.
Yeah, the database is it, yeah.
And then all the application logic is on the client side, yeah.
Can you do a home network a home network with PXE booting, right?
There's nothing to stop it in theory. And theoretically, it's all still possible, but there's no mainstream way of working it, does it? Because X and Wayland and the GNU system and everything. Well, maybe not. No, everything in GNU actually. That's not fair.
Linux,
and Windows and Mac and everything have all been built to be per device, essentially.
With PXE booting, you'd still be running it. Locally, the remote computer is doing all the work, and you're just seeing the results, like old terminals.
Yeah, so definitely, yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, and also you probably can't PXE boot from things like tablets and phones, right?
Well, it's not.
There's no reason you couldn't PXE. Oh, that would just be a remote hard drive. It wouldn't be doing the process.
That's starting up. That's giving you still installing a whole system. Over you, it's not the same as having a thin client.
You want all the processing to be remote, and basically all you've got this end is a screen an input.
Terminal.
Is that not what PXE booting is?
No.
No.
That's just a remote hard drive, effectively.
It's a remote startup system.
Your processing is still local. You need a CPU locally, just your hard drive is wherever.
Right, okay. But so PXE booting's all running off the one hard drive, several computers running off hard drive.
Yeah, it's called it's what it stands for is pre-boot execution environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it transfers everything to that computer. So you're still running everything on that computer that's booted up from it.
I mean, an example of what we're talking about, but cloud rather than what we're talking about, would be, what's the Google game thing called?
Oh, Stadia.
Yeah,
Stadia.
Like that.
That's thin client computing, basically.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Oh, well, there's actually, interestingly enough, there's something quite close to that it's got shells.com.
Yeah, but that's still in we're saying that, but not in the cloud.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that VNC?
No,
because there's still a shared, there's still resources sort of shared, but.
Yeah. On a very weak, on a screen that had VNC built in, that would be it, but that would be a very inefficient way to do it.
So, like a Roku. Sorry, I've just.
Everything you're talking about is commercial ventures. You see my point? This is the problem with it, is trying to do it now. Everybody be, oh, well, how can I make money? How can I be the company that does it? That's the problem. Mm. It's not being made.
To
be fair, obviously, DEC and IBM and everyone, that's where it came from anyway, but.
The way to do specifically what we're talking about now would be to have like a centralized computer, a mainframe in your house, which is just a computer, and then just have you can't buy terminals anymore, but essentially,
you just
SSH into that machine, and just if you just had terminals, this would seem like a computer, but everything's running on just SSH into that.
Yeah,
but obviously,
graphically, it's different because games and things like that use a different. Different way of working, but
I mean, X is set up to work that way, not necessarily very well, but
yeah, the idea of X is it would work on a multi-user.
But you can't even buy a dumb terminal anymore. They don't exist. I mean, there may be exceptions to that, but broadly speaking, they don't exist.
Even build one.
Yeah. What kind of firmware is on a dumb terminal?
It wouldn't have any logic at all. It would just be a serial connection, basically.
Yeah, it's a bit of circuitry that it's an I/O device.
Hmm.
So a terminal was basically a screen or a printer in some cases, and a keyboard. So screen and a keyboard that communicates over serial. And that's basically what it does. There's not a lot of internal thing. If you run a terminal emulator, that's literally what the terminal did.
If you watch technology TV shows from like the 70s, that's what they foresaw. When they talked in terms of like the potential of home computing, they were thinking of having a mainframe and dumb terminals in every room, which would be really cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a hell of a.
I suppose there's no technology to do it now, but is it like if you had a computer and you just had lots of keyboards and lots of screens off of it, and then each screen was like a Linux desktop and you had multiple mouses and multiple.
Inputs. Exactly that. Yeah. But everything's running on the one machine.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how fundamentally Unix and Linux is set up to work. That's why we have. The ability to have and everything things run under different user accounts. It's because it's set up to work that way because it was a mainframe operating system. We just use it all on one computer now, which is kind of silly.
So lots of that functionality and underpinnings have been destroyed because of it's been used as a desktop operating system.
I mean, if you switch to a different TTY, you're effectively that is a virtual. Terminal.
Yeah.
So you're doing that on one computer.
Yeah. But in the world of the Expanse, in space travel, is mesh networks? I'm imagining would probably be more of a default thing, right? Because when you're over such vast distances, There's far too much of a delay for any kind of real-time network.
It makes sense, but they don't talk in those terms. Because when they talk about sending a message, they talk about contacting a particular relay. So yeah. I think it's still a specifically rooted network rather than a mesh network.
To go from the Agatha King to Earth or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But like around the Agatha King would have a separate internal network, as I imagine they do in real life anyway, right? Like shifting up an internal network, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, of course. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So we're breaking this down.
This might get some nerd feedback this episode. Tell us how wrong we all are.
Yeah. See, you have a go at me for looking at all their clothing outfits, and then.
I don't have a go at you about it.
I just point out that you have an interest. That's not the same as having a go at you.
In terms of imagining how these things might work, I like the idea of like basically the iPad or whatever you want to call it on like a swingy arm. So you do your stuff, you know, and then you swing it out of the way and, you know, do your stuff, what you've got to do.
Yeah, there's it's not the best film, but AVP 2. At one point in AVP 2, there's like the predator who's been signaled to clean everything up. He's got like a piloty seat thing and a computer on a swings out in an arm and everything. And to me that's a good way of working. Yeah,
it makes sense.
Desks are a bit.
I wonder what actually a modern navy frigate is like in those regards. I wonder what they. I imagine they still have fixed.
Mm-hmm. The thing is consoles and dedicated consoles, not necessarily computer console, but dedicated consoles and things like on an aircraft or whatever makes sense because they've got a lot more physical buttons and stuff, although a lot of the more modern ones is like touchscreen, but you don't want something you could accidentally mash two buttons with on a fucking aircraft. You know, if you're flying a jumbo jet, you want physical controls. And I think that's something that we miss a lot. I would still like, it'll be smaller screens with physical buttons all around them and stuff. And there's ways of doing that where we've got, I mean, again, it's the cost of technology, but in military terms, I'm sure they do, where the buttons are basically little screens as well, so they can change the function depending on the thing.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever used an oscilloscope, like a digital oscilloscope?
Yeah. I mean, at school.
Yeah, and there's like physical buttons, and what the button does changes, it's a modal thing, and it changes there, and you push. Yeah. So you've got some physical buttons that do the same thing. So instead of having to flick through menus, or it's just like, at this point in time, these are the four functions you get if you push these four buttons. And that's kind of what function keys were meant to be for on computers. But again, it's all been bastardized and misused. And we've decided that Alt-F4 is the way you shut down a pro... What? Mm-hmm. What? Fuck off.
I've got a picture of an oscilloscope that is kind of cool.
So I'm just laughing at Drew saying about joining a cult. I forgot about that.
So he got
offered a form to join a cult.
What kind of cult?
Well, I filled in the form, and the form had like some silly questions on it, so I thought it was a jokey thing, like somebody being a bit arty and stuff. Because it was asking about would I be really willing to be a carnivore, am I willing to go barefoot and stuff like that? And I was like, this is a jokey, so I filled it in jokily, and then I got a response with a Discord link, so I joined the Discord, and it seems to be a lot of like medical quackery. About like, you know, like I don't know the equivalent of that. What was that? Something silver that, you know, those kind of like medical nonsense things. And I was like, okay, backed out of there.
Right,
I've got an oscilloscope up on the screen now. Ah, no, that's, I think that's an analog one.
Ah, right, yeah. Well, yeah, like I just typed in oscilloscope into Wikipedia.
Yeah, try digital oscilloscope and you get a modern one. I mean, that's a really cool oscilloscope. Don't get me wrong. I would love to have that one instead of the one I've got. But if you get if you get an analog one, a digital one up, you'll see what they've got is they've got like a, it's like, you know, hang on, I find a, you know, you get them for aircraft simulation. You get those little buttons, you know, that, like if you go to.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So, let's.
I'm going to find something that, I mean, you know, flight sim control stuff. Obviously, you get, you know, joysticks and yokes and all that sort of thing, but you also get, like, radio panels and things like that. That's a digital oscilloscope. There you go. So you see those, it doesn't matter which side you go to, but those buttons are unmarked, you see? They're just blank. Mm. And what happens is they're modal, so the button does something depending on what mode you're in.
Mm.
That's a four-channel one as well. I don't know a four-channel one, I've got two. So, you know, the depending on the mode you're in, the buttons do different stuff. But you can see it immediately. It's an immediate thing. You can push the button. And it's kind of how desktops are supposed to work as well. The whole desktop paradigm is meant to be similar to that. But it's just, you know, it's not... hang on, I'll show you what I'm... Right. I'm going to open link in new tab. There we go. Right, I'm going to copy image. I'm going to dump this to you guys, and then I'll dump it in the... For the people at home, for the viewer to have a look at as well.
Ooh, that looks very cool.
So, like, that's an aircraft, right? That's a real aircraft. Mm-hmm. But you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. They've got the similar thing to that oscilloscope down on each side of the little screens. So instead of having one huge screen where you're trying to look at information all over the place, they've got lots of little screens. And I still think that's a better idea. I'd still rather have a lot of little screens.
This is total bullshit, though.
What?
This. You don't need that many fucking buttons to... I think they're...
I thought you meant I was making it up or this wasn't a real aircraft or something.
Those buttons are just there to make pilots feel big and important. Like, they're all much... A plane can go up, down, left, or right. That four button. You don't need that many fucking buttons for a plane. It's all lies. Most of them do nothing.
Okay. You know, I tell you what, if we're ever in trouble, we're all aboard a plane and it's going to go down, I don't want Drew to be the one to be attempting to... does nothing. Let's just go...
He seems to grasp the principle of it. I mean...
You did miss out an entire axis of movement, but that's okay. I'm not going to...
But they're the only, they're the only ones that matter in terms of getting somewhere.
That's not how aircraft move, though.
What I don't trust about that interface is that the letters on the keypad on the left go A, B, C, D, E, alphabetical. What kind of psycho lays out a keyboard like that? I abhor it. I hate it when games do it.
Well, that's just because you're used to one that was made to sell typewriters, or to sell keyboards to sell typewriters. Yeah,
we should just work out a digital keyboard and just like all stick to it. With minor.
At least wasn't a fucking touch screen. That was the main thing. That's my point. You know.
I mean,
I can't remember what the hell we're talking about now. Where we've gone from there.
To be completely candid on the matter, I don't actually believe that aeroplanes can fly. The Wright brother one, yes, fair enough. That's quite. But like a 747 or whatever, made out of metal.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? How is metal going to fly?
I'm assuming
you're the same about ships.
No, I believe ships can float. Metal ships can't float, obviously. But wooden ships, we've all seen metal.
You put it in water and it sinks.
Exactly. But aeroplanes.
That's why submarines just go underwater. Right?
I think when you get on an aeroplane, they just put screens down.
I remember when I was a kid, I thought that.
And then it goes through secret tunnels.
And there's not really other countries or anything. Everything's just, it's just all videos.
It's dangerously close to flat Earth. But
I
do believe the Earth is round. I just don't believe that aeroplanes can fly. I mean, the old, triplanes and biplanes, if they're made out of cloth and wood, they can probably fly, but not a 747.
I mean, also, have you seen how many people are on the plane as well?
Yeah, they must weigh a lot. They must weigh an awful lot,
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's just terrible.
And how do they get electricity on the plane if it's flying?
Yeah, you can't plug it in. Where's the and cable?
Now,
you'd see the cable going all over the place, wouldn't you?
It blows my mind that you can get Wi-Fi on planes.
Mm. No, but you what can't. Drew will tell you that's a lie. You're just in a simulation.
Oh, no, because they're plugged in. They're just on the ground, plugged in. You're just,
right, okay.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Like, if I walk down the end of my garden, I lose my Wi-Fi connection. But for some reason, they can keep it up in the air.
And yet, from what I've heard, the Wi-Fi on an aeroplane...
You've not been outside for a long time, have you, Drew?
No. But from what I've heard, the Wi-Fi on an aeroplane is better than the Wi-Fi on a train. That makes no sense. You can put the fucking internet in the tracks on a train.
You could do. Yeah, that's a fair point. No notes.
Good. Planes aren't real. And if they were, okay, they wouldn't need this many fucking buttons.
Right.
Up, down, left, right.
Faster, slower, and turny.
Turny. I like it. That's it. So, yeah. I'm not going to get into aerodynamics and...
A joystick and two pedals.
Exactly. I've played flight simulators with one of these.
What more do you need?
When you get into a cockpit on an airplane, it should just have a USB port. You plug your controller in, and you're
everybody's
off.
Got their uncomfortable controller then. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not wireless, I mean, that's how they do it with submarines.
Bluetooth. Oh, I'd love that airplane.
You're on an airplane. And the pilot goes, "I'm sorry, I've lost my Bluetooth connection."
Hang on. We've got to reboot the plane and hold down the power button. We are coming in for landing, so.
Yeah. But the submarine that those billionaires died on, that used the game's controller.
Yeah.
Did it really?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think the control mechanism was the problem.
That's just natural selection, though, isn't it?
No. Submarines do use, like, those type of controllers, the micro submarines. So,
yeah, all the things that we've got are based on real things. It's not there's a sort of a, what's the word when things go two ways?
Bisexual.
An affinity. Not affinity. Basically, you know, it's like phones look like Star Trek communicators sometimes and things like that. You know?
Mm. Oh, life imitating art imitating life, that kind of thing.
Sort of, but more of a technological part of, you know, way of it. Sorry, I shouldn't have said there was a specific thing. Could we all get
No, I'm trying to, I'm trying to think of the word now. Yeah.
That, don't we? Yeah. But yeah. We're like aircraft. I mean, a brilliant one, actually, this is more art, limiting life imitating art, is that the cockpit in Elite Dangerous has specific controllers that are available in real life as the, you know, it's one of the controllers you can get in real life.
Well, an even more pronounced one than that. When Apple was suing everybody because they wanted to be the only one who could make tablets, one of the things that was used.
But tablets exist before Apple.
But one of the things that was used because they were patenting specific things like the smooth surface and bullshit like that. Yeah. But one of the things that was used as prior art. In that lawsuit was the tablets in Star Trek.
Mm. Right.
Oh, okay.
But the idea of a tablet existed before Apple made them.
But they were paid. Yeah.
They weren't a big popular thing.
They were invented by Moses of the Bible.
Yeah, yeah. He broke a couple.
He broke a couple, but those were
the other ones. Like, and that's why. And the battery still had a bit of charge in the ones that he put in and kept in the Ark, because that's what killed those Germans in the documentary.
Yeah.
Well, so the one he broke said, "Forget everything I wrote before. These are the real rules."
Mm-hmm.
Covet as many asses as you like.
Covet all the asses.
Covet.
Like, get them in a line and just
covet go the down fuck all out the asses. Of
yeah.
Covet in left and right.
I thought it was. Was it asses? I thought it was something else. I thought it was oxen. No, coveting. No, I can't remember.
It's definitely asses.
What's the point of coveting anything other than an ass?
Okay, fair enough.
But
I find it interesting that in the Ten Commandments there's a separate one for property and wives. And then people don't realise how misogynistic this all is, you know. It's like...
Oh, so coveting wives and coveting oxen, they're two different commandments.
Asses, not oxen.
Oh yeah, asses, sorry. I'm not a biblical scholar like you.
Oh, there's a revelation I think that we've kind of missed.
Mm-hmm.
Naomi could be leaving the Rosinante.
Hmm.
Yeah, Holden says that. You're leaving, aren't you? Right, we've also skipped something here. Actually, quite a big thing, given that we're quite far through. Maybe I should get back to it. Is that the reason they're able to stop the hybrid pods is that Fred Johnson has nuclear missiles and they create a shield of nuclear missiles. Because she turns the transponders on. If they're all headed to the one target, at this stage, they'll all be together.
I was half expecting to see the big net come out. Get the net, boys!
Well, actually,
Daddy's going fishing.
No, I'm mixing up my commandments there. It is thou shalt not covet. But it is in the Bible, you know, don't covet your neighbor's wife or his ox or donkey. Or anything.
They laughed when I bought that big net, but it's paying back dividends.
Yeah, sorry, back to Fred Johnson. Yeah. So they do, you know, she gets the crew to agree to it. But also, so A, they're trusting Fred Johnson to help them, but she also puts it forward that this is a chance to do good and strengthen the belt, you know?
She sells it. Yeah. I like that, actually. She sells it to the crew differently to how she sells it to Fred Johnson.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a few things in the episode where people do that, and I like that because it's quite real.
No, we saw it last episode on the Martian ship. She was telling the Martian ship, "Is like, don't do anything because they're basically killing themselves." You know.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I mean, at that point, she was just telling a story that is more.
Oh yeah, it's not like she's lying. She's just the part you'll be interested in. This is the part you'll be interested in. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's perhaps a little bit more of a sensible thing than doing what Erin Wright does to President Mann.
Or
the inverse of the President Mann.
Yeah. A bit more sophisticated.
More sophisticated.
I think if there's any other benevolent major points that we've missed. I think I was the only other major one.
I mean, I want to know. I'm keen. I want the belt now. Fuck the UN. I'm on team belt. Can I have a belt? Another belt, like
Better loader. Right. Yeah. Okay. So really,
how about you can be the UN flag with like an anarchy sign spray painted over it. That'd be pretty.
Yeah.
Well, somebody would have to do that because I'm not arty enough.
All right, I'll do it when I do the thumbnail.
Yeah.
There's one line that I like when I think it's Holden talking to Mao, when Mao's sort of pleading for "Don't kill me, I'm important," you know, blah blah blah, and Holden just says, "Can you stop the pods that were launched?" Then shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
I like to see a billionaire put in his place.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, didn't shoot him in the back, but good enough.
I mean, I'm hoping. I mean, I'm. What's going to happen to Jules Pierre-Mao? Like, what's?
Who knows?
You know, he's.
You know what? I genuinely can't remember. So I'm as wondering as you at the moment.
Really? Or are you just poker? No, I think you're bullshitting me. Because he's the big bad, right? Like, because it's like maybe he is,
but he's not important.
Not now.
He's the one. He's
Mao.
All he's really doing
Mao
is providing
him, not now.
Providing the resources. Like he's not, you know. I mean, the proton molecule's there now. Like he's not important at this point, really.
I guess not.
Like the only reason they want him badly is to bring him to justice. Not really as a preventative or anything like that.
Yeah. So I could imagine that he just gets sent back down to Earth and. And he gets a trial, and then that's not interesting anymore. But maybe, I mean, because he's not super knowledgeable, right? Like he's not.
No, I mean, I think the big payoff
follows the
there
results,
is just,
but it doesn't follow the details, you know.
Him being made to kneel to Avasarala is the payoff there. I think really for us as an audience,
That's the.
Sorry, just resetting the camera.
That's okay.
But yeah, so I like to see what the belt politics are though, like what, as in like what how they come to the, you know, so Brian Johnson, he sends the rockets,
Fred
Fred
Brian Fred
to the, bread. Bread Hovis. He goes. stand for the national anthem.
Do you know that advert? You know that advert, that particular Hovis advert with the kid, the kid on the street, and that tune playing. Is it Holst or Grieg or whoever? That was directed. Who directed the Alien?
Yeah, Ridley Scott. Yeah,
yeah, it's directed.
He
by
did
Ridley
the 1984
Scott,
Apple advert as well. The Mac,
yeah, which was a very good advert.
What advert was that? The Apple one?
The 1984
style.
It was 1984, as in the book 1984.
Oh, yeah.
It has a woman hammer thrower, and there's a big big brother on a screen.
It's Dvorak,
a bunch of skinheads.
Incidentally,
Dvorak, New World Symphony.
Symphony number 9 from the New World. Yep.
Yeah. Hammer, and yeah, and there's a bunch of skinheads who were actual skinheads, apparently, like neo-Nazis that they hired to be in the video.
Oh,
and she throws the hammer into the screen and blah blah. Like it's a nonsense advert. It's what it was the first of those really sort of like, you know, that, you know, like how perfume ads are just like absolute fucking nonsense. Yeah, yeah, it was kind of one of the first ones of those.
How do you even advertise perfume? Because like,
that's the point, isn't it? Yeah. Sniff. How do you advertise an Apple Mac to come to people that don't really know anything about computers?
What was the beard that did like a spoofy? It had that 90s like well known tit lady, in an ice cream van, and they were parodying like other adverts.
Oh, was it the beer one you're talking about?
Yeah,
Oh,
and it just has a northern mango, and all that smells cracking or something. That's how you advertise perfume, just like.
Is that's a new level of Space Virgin's misogyny, referring to someone as the tit lady.
I mean, she was the tit lady. That was her job, was her tits in the 90s. She's very funny, actually. She's very intelligent.
Very nice
funny.
Lady,
she went,
actually. Yeah,
she went on to host things, but her job in the 90s was to be an FHM. You know, I'm not being misogynist. That was her job.
Fucking hell! I would have remembered her name eventually if I hadn't been.
We prefer the term milkmaid.
No, see, now that's misogynistic.
What, to milkmaids or busty women?
Oh, fucking hell.
Sykes? Somebody
Is Hamish having a breakdown?
Yeah, he's having a 90s crash.
Right.
Melanie Sykes. Yeah,
Millennium Bug.
I'll link the advert because it was. What's the name of the company?
Boddington's.
Boddington's.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, Boddington's bees.
Are you thinking Boddington peas?
And she presented today with Des and Mel, amongst other things, and reported for the Big Breakfast and a few other things.
That's actually what it was, a very good parody of that kind of advertising. Anyway, yeah, that ad was a cool looking ad.
So Fred Johnson, he takes out all the proto. Did he take? I don't know. We don't know if he takes out all of them or a lot of them. Or,
I think we're just guessing at this point. Like
it's a cloud of nuclear. They set up a cloud of nuclear weapons.
Is saying like not as in they missed one, but as in did Fred slightly take one out before they blah blah blah. But I don't think.
No, I don't think there was.
I think as viewers we're meant to believe at this point that like Fred is. Same as with the nukes, he's doing what is politically in his interests here. Like he's thinking of the bigger picture, and I don't think keeping a proto boy around would be thought of as a good idea.
No,
I suppose not. I mean, he's already got proto molecule. He's probably.
I mean, even more than nukes, it's not the kind of weapon you'd actually want to use unless you were absolutely fucking unhinged, right? Because it just you're not going to contain that.
No. No, so yeah.
I mean, like, but even if Wynn's plan has succeeded, these things have got to Mars.
Yeah, Mars would just be destroyed.
Turned it into a proto planet. Do they think the proto molecule is just going to stay on Mars? Like, it's going to evolve and come to Earth. Like, it's a stupid plan.
It's a
stupid
weapon. Put the net away, boys. But the belt's newfound political leverage. I'm looking forward to how that's going to be. Going to be used.
You definitely get more. I mentioned this very early on, but I keep mentioning it because I find it really interesting. But there's a tension within Belter politics between kind of the Dawsey faction and the Johnsony faction, and what the tension that represents is the idea of staying true to what we are as Belters, and therefore never really having a central organization, never really being a player.
Yeah, yeah. Not,
or
not,
or becoming a player and losing our identity as Belters.
Yeah, yeah. To become an actual organized faction, they do lose enough. They do in that process lose a lot of what makes them Belters, because being Belters is a sort of freedom thing, really, isn't it? Rather than you don't organize as Belters, you stick together, but you don't organize.
Yeah,
you know, it's a sort of...
you don't have hierarchy, you don't follow orders. You know, you stick with somebody while it's going well, but there's no ties that bind or anything like that. So yeah, that tension does come into play. You will see more Belter stuff, more Belter political political stuff, but particularly that tension coming into play. And I really enjoy the way that tension is, because it's an interesting tension.
It's a bit like it sort of harkens to the Fediverse a little bit, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it's more like the Fediverse than I said. It's decentralized, yeah.
Yeah. I honestly, the belt does like it does feel like the Fediverse almost seems like a precursor to the belt in a way.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, needs to be more furries on the belt though for it to be realistic. Like, you know. Yeah, and everyone on the belt seems much more high functioning than most of the people on the Fedi.
Oh, I'm not sure.
Don't know about that. Yeah. Right, have we? Worth pointing out as well. I don't think I mentioned it already, but this is the end of Caliban's War, the book.
Yes, ah,
so this is the second book.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of felt like this felt like an end of a book.
Yeah, so the first book runs through series one and a bit of series two. Second book runs through series two and a bit of series three. Yeah. I think, I was saying to Drew the other day, I think this is the last series where there is that crossover and it shifts to a point where one series is one book eventually, I think.
I think Hamish and I agree on this. I like having the high point in the middle, and then there is, you know, this high point at the end as well, but I like that structure.
It's not, it's not structured like a TV show. It's structured like one ongoing thing, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of like the one where the high point is like episode 9 and then the what's the opposite of the prologue? Epilogue is like the final episode. So you got a bit of a calm down.
You do get that as well. I think in every season get that as well, but you also get a mid-season high point, which I enjoy.
I do wonder if they'll ever bring it back to do more of the books or not, you know?
Yeah, I'd like them to.
It's the series,
but
of
then
these
would
books.
Be able to get all the same people again together, and would, you know, it's lightning in a bottle sort of thing, isn't it? Yeah.
So is it like is the Expanse like a series? Are there more books outside of the series? Yeah. These series of books,
yeah.
But the show has a finishing that is the end of the series of the books.
Well, I mean, like at this point in the show. As we said before, what was the mystery in season one? By the end of season one, doesn't seem so mysterious anymore, and there's a bigger mystery. Like the mystery from season one does get wrapped up, but then something more important comes along, and it keeps doing that. Really, so there's always resolution, but there's also always, you know, bigger places to go.
Well, I mean,
there's a lot of different characters that cross over in the books as well from different storylines, so you don't get. It's also told from the point of view of characters, but I believe Game of Thrones was done the same. Certain chapters are done in the voice of a certain, or in the viewpoint of a certain character.
All of them, yeah. And I like that. That's a very easy way to follow a story.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, the end of the show, as in the last episode of the last season that we have, it's not unresolved, but it's not like not everything is completely answered, but everything that we've been introduced to is resolved.
Yeah, all the threads of the story that we're interested in have got not necessarily an ending, but a conclusion.
You know that feeling. You've got to finales in this show.
It's not cut off suddenly.
You've got to finales in this show, which have resolved everything that you thought there was a mystery up to that point. But then you have so many more questions. You know, like on Eros, like a lot of things get resolved, but then it's like, oh, but there's so much more going on. It's like that all the way through, basically.
Yeah, and so just to recap,
there's ideas in the show that go that. don't necessarily linearly follow the ideas in the books. You know, they'll put characters in. Like, for example, I gave you an example early on. Avasarala doesn't appear until the second book. Mm. But they made her a character in the show. You know, so they made quite a few changes just to, you know, to make the show more TV-ish, I suppose, is how you want to, depending on how you want to put it.
Yeah, yeah. So the end of season one, that was, like, the final scene was Adam Jensen being sucked up into the proto molecule, right? Was that the...
That was the very end. Yeah, that was the last scene of season one, I think, yeah.
So to be fair, the main mystery still remains. The main mystery remains.
The main mystery in season one, the thing you were most concerned with, is like, who is Julie Mao? Where is Julie Mao? What ships was Julie Mao? Like, where's Julie Mao gone? And that does get resolved, but then it's like, this proton molecule thing is now more important than that. Yeah,
there's a bigger story.
I was always interested in the proto molecule. That was always...
you don't know about the proto molecule until like way into... season one, right at the end of season one, right?
You don't get the name until that, but yeah.
Oh no, killing the blowing up of the Canterbury is perhaps who's trying to start a war.
That's the starting point.
I'm still a little bit confused, just well, not confused now, but like, does Mao? So Mao doesn't even really have that much of a private army, and does he, like, he's got stealth ships that protect spaceships, and but it's not so regimented.
He's probably not. Like, imagine the kind of army that Elon Musk could field, right? Like, what is he like, half a trillion ish
let's
wealth?
Say that, yeah.
And I mean, that isn't money, he's got that in stock. You can't pay for an army in stock, but putting that aside, that's not a very big army. Like, a country could, you know, a country with a GDP of trillions could quite easily, you know, like, massively overwhelm that. So Mao's army is going to be pretty small. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why I suppose he's so interested in the proto molecule, because that could then tip the balance. He could be the president of the solar system.
I don't think we're ever really clear on what Mao really wants to get out of this. I think he's definitely interested in what the proto molecule can do for humanity. I think he is genuinely interested in that, but probably
but his methods
from the point of view. Probably from the point of view of selling it, whatever the result, you know, if it's the ability to become a superhuman, he probably wants to sell that to people, right? Like, he's not an altruist.
I'm assuming kind of that, like, Mao has more money than God, right? Like, the universe's richest man, or the solar system's richest man, almost, is how I'm... Maybe he's not.
But that still doesn't compete with a government. And bear in mind, a government is a planet now. Like, it's not even going to come close to, you know, the entire GDP of the Earth.
Yeah. But then, isn't it like Elon Musk's big thing, and a lot of people suspect that his driving philosophy is terraforming Mars. Like, to a lot of people,
bullshit.
Think to him,
he's not interested in anything like that. He has no interest in actual things like that.
Okay,
it's all ego and nothing.
Go on, no, like, everything I mean, I agree
he does,
with Hamish, but...
everything he does, and all the big projects he talks about have all been things to divert from something else, taking what would be his profits. Like, he managed to... I can't remember what it was. No, fucking hell, I don't want to... You're making me look up Musk. Fucking hell. Making me look him up. This is terrible.
No, for the sake of argument, carry on.
Like, because when you're that far up the food chain, right, there isn't much point in going... Like, you've conquered the money side problem of life, right? Like, what else is...
Yeah, I think the kind of personality that can have dreams like that, and the kind of personality that can become a billionaire, or mutually exclusive.
Yeah, totally, yeah. The Hyperloop, that was his bullshit thing that he did.
I don't think the Hyperloop comes into this that much.
No, it does.
Really.
Same with SpaceX and all that. It's bullshit. He's not interested in that. He wants political control and more money. Mm. But the Hyperloop thing was basically to stop other government things from happening that would take profit away from him, essentially.
It's essentially to stop public transport.
Yeah, he doesn't want public transport. He wants to own
cars. Yeah. No, I think that's a valid. I think that's a valid metaphor. But yeah, I don't think. Yeah,
yeah,
I think
totally mutually. Anybody that's got a vision for humanity doesn't have a vision for making billions.
Yeah.
Okay.
These are two separate types of people completely.
I think so. I do think so. So I think, yeah, what Billy there is concerned themselves with. Well, the thing is, I don't think they ever see themselves as the top of the game. They always just want more and more and more. That's the thing. That's like, always want...
like Trump, it's insecurity that drives people like Trump and Musk. They're completely insecure. They're so insecure that they just want... I mean, that's look at Trump. Trump made a big announcement because of the papers were making jokes about Musk owning them and stuff. It's like, this is not the case, blah, 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 blah. You know, and he did this big spiel on his Truth Social or whatever it's called.
No, the one that revealed how fragile Trump's ego was when I can't remember who said it originally, but the small hands thing.
That was
the one that
simple things like that. If that can derail your personality, then there's something very fucking well.
Is that Marco Rubio or something?
I think it might have been.
So
to bring that into the Expanse, then, so Mao doesn't necessarily have any kind of
I think the problem with Mao is that he's not actually a very realistic character in that sense, and that's why the flip-flopping things that he did in the last few episodes sort of worked and sort of didn't in different ways, is because he doesn't seem to have a real goal anyway.
No, I think he does, but I don't think the show ever states it outright. I think his goal... I think he does believe that the proto molecule could result to, like, you know, could result in transhumans or post-humans, humans that could, you know, survive in space or whatever. But he thinks we need to research that, find out how to get that, and then sell it to governments so they can do deep space He's just thinking about turning it into a product. He's not thinking about this is our future in a philosophical way.
Yeah, he wants to commoditize it.
That's the word,
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he wants to own the gold mine. Or the coal mine, probably a better example. He wants to own the coal mine, but he doesn't care about industrial revolution.
Whereas I think the scientist, the scientist whose head Miller blows off.
Dresden.
I think he did think of it in terms of the things he says. I think he thought of it in terms of altruistically, this is the future of humanity and we have to do whatever is necessary to research it to get to that point where blah, blah. I mean, I don't agree with this. You know, I was in favor of blowing his head off. But I think he was the one who thought in
those
terms.
He was the most idealistic one of them all, yeah.
You know, he was the Wozniak. Mao is the Jobs.
What does that make Strickland then?
Was Wozniak's second in command?
I mean, Strickland was obviously Mengele anyway. That was the
point. Cool. Right, have we covered everything?
I was too slow there. I wasn't vigilant. If it was, I wanted the blah 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 Mengele, and you going cool, and I was going to stop the recording because that's usually what I try and do is catch a moment where we're all definitely winding down, but there's, you know, some
you get it that actually, yeah, you've got a knack for that, yeah.
And that was definitely a part I missed, but am I too lazy to go back and edit it? Probably,
yes. That-